Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Public restrooms can often be a hangout for the homosexual. Bobby and his friends hadn't noticed the man who had been in the restroom when they changed, and as it was Lady suggested, they take the shortcut under the pier, but the others preferred to take the more traveled way home. Bobby recognized the stranger as the man in the restroom. The shortcut under the pier didn't seem like a good idea at all. After all, it's more fun to stay with your friends anyway. Bobby had made a wise decision. It may have saved his life. So keep with your group. And don't go off alone with strangers unless you have the permission of your parent or teacher.
Hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of February, the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not really ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for quality entertainment and amusements. If you'd like to join us today telephonically, it is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com, or as Don Taylor would say, rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Don, if that's your pleasure. It's don@rickemerson.com. don@rickemerson.com, D-A-W-N. You can also get at us. You can hit us. Hit us on the text. Or as I heard someone say actually not too long ago, say, hit me on my hip. Apparently because that's where he was carrying his cellular telephone at the time, Don.
Oh, you carry it on your hip.
That's right. On my hip, right next to my whip. You can do that Rick Emerson Show. That is Rick Emerson Show is our Skype username. And again, the text box at rickemerson.com. The Flamethrower is open as well. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you today in part by E.H. Vending. EHVending.com is where you can find out more about EH Vending, the vending service and vending solution for all of your vending needs in your vending life. Vending, 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 vending.
And vending, vending, vending.
See, you were going that way. I was trying to go like a Venn diagram sort of, but that didn't really work.
Not at all.
In any way. It's Tuesday, and thank you for joining us on this day 12. It is 503-505-6964. Coming up today, Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Clergy Watch, and a Snuff Watch, which has a certain sort of memety and rhythm to it that I like. Clown Watch, Clergy Watch, Taser Watch, Snuff Watch, and I don't know who the Snuff Watch is. Okay, so did you say it's a woman?
No, you did not ask if it was male or female.
Okay, male?
Yes.
Male over the age of 60?
Yes.
Entertainer?
Yes.
Musician?
No.
actor.
Yes.
Primarily movie or television?
Who? You probably know him primarily from movies.
John Mahoney.
No.
Oh, that's good, because it would suck if that guy was dead. Wait, let me list some other people that I don't want to be dead. Abe Vigoda.
No.
Ernest Borgnine.
No.
George Papard. Damn, too late. Dirk Benedict.
No.
Okay. Dwight Schultz.
No.
I'm just going to go with Melinda Coulier.
You will be sad, though, because you do like him.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, now I'm preemptively sad. Damn you, Dawn. Why do you have to ruin everything? Why do you have to be like Johnny Killjoy over there? That's why no one likes you. In any event, it is...
That's why.
Well, it's one of many reasons. I don't have time to list them all. Sometimes you just have to go with a microcosmic view of things. Dawn! So that's all coming up today. Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Clergy Watch, Snuff Watch. We will also be talking to Benji Barker from the Alter Egos Society. And the Alter Ego Society, those folks behind Project Mayor Man, which is going on right now. So I guess they're going to be... So I get the details, actually, on this sheet of paper that I have yet to print out, but I think it's all the way through February that they're going to be taking those entries, and then I guess it is at the Stumptown Comics Festival that this is going to be? I guess he can answer all these questions, but I think it's at the Stumptown Comics Festival they're going to actually unveil the winning costume for our mayor, Sam Adams.
Maybe, yeah. The winner does get tickets to the Stumptown Comics Festival, so I guess they'll know before they get there that they won, but I believe they are unveiling it at...
The public unveiling will be at the Stumptown Comics Festival.
And I'm assuming that it will be unveiled with him wearing it?
Oh, not only is Sam Adams going to be wearing it, he's agreed you can go get your photo taken with him and all the proceeds. It's like, you know, a couple bucks to get your picture with the mayor in his costume, and then the proceeds go to benefit PEAR, which is a, they bring arts education to homeless and disadvantaged youth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're going to be able to go and get this. So whatever the costume is, you'll be able to go and pose with Sam Adams, get your snap on with him, which is freaking awesome, by the way.
That is.
Which is one of those things that makes you just want to pick up the phone and call other cities and just, you know, and just give them a little, you know, give them a little munting over the phone and then slam it down. And then, you know, and then repeat that activity with somebody else, with Muncie, Indiana.
And then their mayors could, like, battle our mayors, or they could join together to be kind of a mayor justice league.
I guess that they could battle our mayor, except they'd lose, because we're going to be the only city with a superhero mayor. That's the thing.
Yeah, but I mean, if other towns raised money by making costumes for their mayors, there could be a whole bunch of mayor superheroes around the country, and then they could join together and have, like, kind of a Justice League of mayors.
I guess I asked, we had Benja on Outlook Portland yesterday. It's going to air this coming weekend. And I asked him if they were going to be taking the Alter Ego Society idea or the Mayor Man idea and taking it to, you know, expanding it to other cities. And he did this great sort of, like, arching the yacht, and he went, maybe. You know, and it was, and I went, okay.
Yeah. Again, though, they're, you know, this is Portland. There's only so many towns that you can do something like this.
I don't really know that it's going to fly. Like, that wouldn't go in Provo. That's going to be a thing. They would look askance at you if you were to do that.
I don't see, you know, Kansas City isn't going to be doing something like this.
No. That was like a half of 1%
Wasilla.
Joke I just did right there. No, not there. Not Washtenaw.
No.
Probably not Tacoma. No. They could really use a superhero in Tacoma. That's the thing. That's a mayor that could use a a guy who could, or just some cops. You know, or something. Hey, let me ask you this.
It is the sexiest city, though. The most romantic city.
Dawn, you're a vaginal American. Let me ask you your thoughts on this. Have you seen the Wonder Woman MAC thing?
Wonder Woman MAC thing?
For MAC Cosmetics?
No, I have not.
All right. I almost don't want to have you look at it now, then. I want to have you... I almost feel like you shouldn't look at it. You should wait. Because I don't want to get, like, a half-cocked opinion from you.
Okay.
Not in the sense that you would be... Not in the sense that you wouldn't know what you thought, but I want you to sort of be able to think about it. I want you to be able to view the thing objectively and without, you know, without outside interference, and then get back to me on it. I don't want you to be like watching it while you know you're trying to juggle a bunch of other stuff in here today. The upshot is that there's this new ad campaign that's come out from MAC Cosmetics, and it is illustrated by Mike Allred, and it's Wonder Woman. I swear to God, I'm not making any of this up, and I feel like I almost shouldn't even tell you because I'm going to bias you or prejudice you. But the idea is that Wonder Woman is saving plain-looking girls from homeliness through the use of cosmetics, specifically those made by the MAC Corporation.
That's really what...
I'm not making it up.
I
couldn't make that up. I couldn't fabricate. And I say this as a guy with MAC cosmetics in my bag right now, by the way, from the filming this morning.
That's kind of unfortunate.
It's not just unfortunate. It's also awkward and cringe-inducing if you watch it.
I was kind of excited there for a moment. Where I thought, you know, MAC cosmetics, they've done some interesting things. They had the whole they had the whole RuPaul line of cosmetics, which was kind of awesome. And They make a fine product. And then Mike Allred. I love Mike Allred.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing that's going to conflict you about it.
Wonder Woman should be empowering young girls in better ways than putting makeup on them.
I will say this. Here's what's my exposure to it. Is I came home the other day from, like, I don't know, I was here, I was doing something, and I came home, and Laura was just sitting there on the couch staring at her MacBook with this sort of, like, and you guys know this, the angry pursing of the lips, and it really was for all the world like someone had drawn her just to be posed a certain way when I came in. Like, lips pursed, and her, like, one hand sort of clenched up a little bit, and an eyebrow arched at the screen, because apparently she had just finished watching this TV spot from Mac. And I said, hey baby, what's up? And she said, and then she looked up at me for a moment, and I wondered if I had done something wrong. And I think what I'd done wrong at that moment is to have a penis. But she said, come here and watch this and tell me what you think. And I said, now I've just gotten totally off track, but I sat down on the couch, and she said, watch this commercial and give me your thoughts on it. And it is an animated spot. First of all, it's beautiful looking. I mean, it's a great, great looking spot, because it's Mike Allred, who is the guy who does, he does Mad Men, does he not?
Yeah.
He also did, you Kevin Smith fans will know him as the man who did the Blunt Man and Chronic artwork and all the opening credit stuff for Chasing Amy.
And a really nice guy. I met him here. He's local, and I met him at a screening a few months ago. Really, really nice guy.
And everything I've heard about him is that he's a great guy, and that people really dig him, and that they just love him as a person. He's a great artist and whatever. And again, I'm not trying to knock him. And you know what? A brother going to make that dollar.
Yeah, a job's a job.
Yeah, I mean, you got to eat. So it's like Rick Emerson doesn't hate for that. But it's the thing where it is it's a comic book layout with all of the various panels, but then it becomes sort of animated, where the camera, it does the Ken Burns thing, or the camera moves in and out of the frames, and the frames themselves animate a little bit, and it does that Lichtenstein thing or whatever, of zooming in really closely so you get the cool dots and whatever. It's a beautiful looking spot, but the premise of it is that there is a villainous Medusa, who I think is just like the regular plain old Medusa, because I don't think there's an actual super villain of Medusa. I think it's the actual, like, Medusa. And so she is transforming women into these sort of zombies called Plain Janes, where they're all gray and washed out and, you know, without cosmetic, without mashed up berries on their cheeks to make the rest of the tribe find them attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wonder Woman, of course, is horrified by this because a woman's power derives from her full, luscious lips.
No, of course.
And so Wonder Woman comes in, and she, through the cunning use of MAC cosmetics, I think imprisons Medusa, or like vanquishes her to the outer Mitzelplick realm or whatever, and then makes over the girls by giving them sharply defined features, and I think more perfectly plumpified lips and augmented eyes, and then at the end she says something about, you know, blah 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 evildoers, and so my wife has me watch this whole thing, and she says, what do you think about this? And I'm not saying that she was testing me, but it is one of those things where you look back and you. And she really wasn't testing me. It's not like, because there are things on which we don't agree, and there are gender issues on which my wife and I, we don't have strident disagreements, but where we view things a little bit differently. But it is one of those things where you realize one of the reasons why we're still together is because she and I, where you have solidarity on certain things, and certain things you share an opinion on, even if it's for somewhat different reasons, and that's the glue that keeps you together. And I just looked and I said, This was created by old people, probably old white people, and almost certainly old white people with penises in a boardroom somewhere, because they thought that it would be sort of edgy and hip, and everybody loves those superhero movies, and this is the way that you can try to make a company that is kind of having its lunch eaten by Bare Essentials and other cosmetics firms make a little inroad and have a little impact online by being sort of edgy and whatever. But it just kind of makes you cringe. It just, you look at it and it's sort of, you're embarrassed for the company and for Wonder Woman. I won't say I'm embarrassed for Mike Allred because it's a beautiful spot, but you do realize that, like, it just has entirely the wrong aim. And also, it seems to me that if you're a superpower, that you
apparently
should be using it, that to fight Nazis.
And apparently it's an entire makeup collection. It's the Wonder Woman makeup collection. They actually call it that, and it's...
The thing is that, like, Wonder Woman's power does not derive from the fact that she has bullet-shaped breasts, or sharply defined facial features. And also, again, if you can fly, and also you're an Amazon, and plus you have, like, the telepathic headband, and you have the golden lariat of truth, plus you can deflect bullets, aren't there, like, bank robberies you could be stopping, or, like, a mugging, maybe, you could be interfering with?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It just seems like maybe there's a better use of Wonder Woman's time than than to be going around and just slathering foundation on some homely chick somewhere. So I'm just saying. At some point, though, you should watch it. Now that we've kind of had the whole discussion on the air, I would be interested to know your take. But Lara was sort of horrified by it. And I said that I wasn't horrified probably to the same level she was because I'm not a woman and it's not made for me, and so therefore, like, I don't have the extra layer of offense of knowing that some guy created it, thinking that it would hit, that I was his target market. I just look at it and you kind of go, "Ooh, no." It reminds me of that ad for the Dodge Neon a few years ago where they said, "It's like punk rock, but it's a car." And I went, "Oh." And it just gives you the most delightful shiver of horror and revulsion.
So if this ad campaign is really super popular, though, if it really is really super successful, will we see more of this sort of thing? Will there be, like, you know, the Hulk hemorrhoid cream and things like this?
Except you don't want to smash your hemorrhoids. That's the one thing.
No,
Let me just tell you.
The thing is, though, Bruce Banner don't want to make him angry.
No.
And so, therefore, he's got to keep the hemorrhoids under control because, you know.
Bruce Banner, searching for the hidden anal fissure healing techniques that all humans have. Hey, is his name, does he have a different first name in the TV show?
Yes.
David Banner and Bruce Banner.
Yeah, he's Bruce Banner in the comics and David Banner on the TV show.
What is up with that?
I don't know.
Okay, that's a pop culture authority we got to figure out at some point, because it seems like there's got to be some reason for that.
Yeah, there must be, but I don't know what it is.
And also, I get why they changed the origin story for the TV, because you can't really show him running onto a nuclear testing site.
Probably not.
Like, on a budget of $4 or whatever they're shooting on. Anyway, so I didn't mean to start the whole show off with, like, a big rant. And again, it's not like I'm offended by it either, because, you know, because there's bigger things to be offended by. And and I don't fault Mike Allred for taking it, because it's a beautiful way to get his artwork seen by people, and they probably paid him a lot to do it.
No,
but it just seems like it's not going to work.
And also, I realize that the whole point of advertising products at all is to make people feel like they're inadequate. I mean, that's really what almost all advertising is about, that you are somehow not good enough unless you smell better or you look better or you have these particular clothes or you drive this kind of car or what have you. But at the same time, though, we live in a society now where we're having a fairly public dialogue, like, all the time, about how the self-esteem of girls, you know, is damaged by this constant insistence that their value is primarily placed on their looks. So whenever something reinforces that, my initial reaction is like, really? Did you not get the memo that we're starting to figure out that this is actually bad for women?
Well, I would also say this, just from a strictly pragmatic point of view, I mean, let's be honest, you don't really need to drive that point home. It's not like you need advertising to make chicks think that they need to be hot.
No,
that nature sort of takes care of that for you.
No, but I mean, just, you know, it's,
you know what I'm saying? It's not like girls were somehow unaware of the fact that guys want to hump the pretty ones.
Yeah.
I think we've all kind of got the memo. I think your DNA pretty much, that makes sure that you are aware of that.
But when you have a character like Wonder Woman, though, who sends horribly mixed messages anyway. Like, you know, yes, I'm a superhero and, you know, I'm a woman and I could be powerful. On the other hand, I am super, super hot. Look at my cans. But, you know, but I'm also
a mixed message.
You
can't be hot and powerful and a superhero.
Yeah, but I mean, wouldn't it be kind of awesome if she was, like, powerful and a superhero and, you know, wasn't dressed in, like, hot pants?
Well, see, here's the thing, though. I would say no. I'd say if you showed me two things, if you said, look, you can be, you can have superpowers and be homely, or you can have superpowers and be handsome. Which one's more awesome? You say the second one. That's just a fact. It's actually more awesome to be super talented and hot.
But how many superhero guys are there? There are a lot of them that aren't sexy.
But it would be more awesome if they were, is my point.
But the thing
everyone is, everyone would choose to be both.
But all female superheroes have to be sexy. There's no equivalent to, you know, the thing.
Yeah, I suppose, except also little girls really aren't going to grow up to be deflecting bullets. So I'm just saying, it seems like of all the things that Wonder Woman does, the fact that she's hot is the thing that's most accessible to girls. That's the thing they can actually probably pull off with the help of MAC Cosmetics. You're not really going to be flying an invisible jet, is my point. So if you're really...
Okay, you're just making my brain hurt now.
No, I'm just saying, like, if the idea is that you're holding up an impossible standard because of female beauty, really, superheroes are an impossible standard anyway. I just think that maybe you ought to find a different yardstick.
Okay.
One that doesn't exist in the realm of fantasy.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You really don't, though. I can just tell that.
I do see what you're saying. I'm just saying.
Like, I'm not expected to emulate Superman, because that would be stupid.
No, but I mean, but women.
Nor did I feel like I had to growing up. I'm going to be just like Batman or I'm a loser. No one thinks that.
But I mean, like, when I was a kid and I was looking up and I was saying, wow, when I grow up, I want to be Emma Peel. You know, yes, I wanted to be able to, like, shoot a gun and drive a sports car, and I thought it would be awesome to have all these powers, but I also was thinking, but I guess I'd better, like, have a nice enough body that I can fit into skin-tight leather pants.
Well, that's if you want to be Emma Peel.
Well,
that's like saying...
But yes, but like every single image that women get is like that. That, yeah, you want to be able to do this thing, and you'd better look like a freaking supermodel.
I guess. I don't know how I've somehow ended up on the other side of this question, but that's like saying that I should be offended that guys who play in the NFL are all huge because I should get the message that I can do it if I'm spindly. You can't. I mean, that's the thing. And those guys actually exist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
Is it that time of the month, Don? Come on. That was meta right there. That was a thing inside a thing.
It was a thing in a thing, yes. Very good.
Fine, whatever.
You just wrapped it all up in a big misogynistic bow.
There's nothing that you can't end with a flourish by just asking if it's nature's special time. All right, Cloud. I really would continue this conversation, and I mean that in a snarky way. Except we got to do something.
We got
Benja Barker who's coming in actually to talk about superheroes. Well, things. I really didn't mean to sidetrack us here. It's a fascinating ad though, and in just. Because you wonder about the conversations that went into it. You should watch it maybe during a break or something. Because a billion people probably send it to you by now. But I just look at it and I view it as, this is just my take on it. And again, I'm not trying to knock Mike Allred or Mac or Wonder Woman or DC or anybody. I mean, it's a capitalist society. You get what you can for what you can. To me, I look at it, though, and it's just money down the drain. That is just an ad campaign that people are going to look at and they're going to go, oh, somebody's trying to be way more clever than they are. Not going to work. And then they're going to. It seems like they are trying to force a thing into another thing and it doesn't fit. And there is nothing worse than mistargeted advertising or advertising that is trying to be very sort of winking and nodding and knowing and cutting edge. And in reality, they're off the mark because then it's. Because then it's like, you know what it is? Then it's not like eating a food that you don't like. It's like eating a food that you kind of do like that's gone bad. Mm. Where it's not just, I mean, it's like, it's a doubly horrible.
Well, I've got it here and during our break before
you can watch
our
it.
Guest arrives, I will watch it.
And then we can all synchronize our periods. It's 503-505-6964. Let me ask you this, Dawn Taylor.
Ax away.
Let me ask you about periods.
Okay. Because I have a vagina, so I'm an expert on this.
Well, more so than I am. I mean, really, let's be honest. There's two of us in this room. We're grading on a curve right now.
Okay.
It's really more of a pass-fail with that.
I will answer what I can.
I have always suspected, although I do not know, because again, penis. I have always suspected that the whole thing, when chicks say that, like, if y'all live together, you'll sink your periods, that is really, I'm not going to say that making it up as such, but I'm saying that is a mathematical illusion in the sense that it's like that whole thing of if you get 100 people in a room together, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's like if you get 100 people in a room together, the odds are not 1 in 3 that they will that two of them will share a birthday. The odds are like 4 in 5, which doesn't make any sense, but then you see it on paper and you go, aha. And so I have always suspected if you get like 9 chicks and they live in an apartment building together, it's not that they're syncing periods as such, it's that the math gives you the illusion that they are because the windows all overlap to such a degree.
No, it actually happens because of hormones. There have been studies done where they've had women walk around with pads under their armpits, and then they have given those pads to other women who don't even meet the first women and have them carry them around for a certain period of time, and the women will start to sync with the original women's period.
Interesting.
It's a hormonal thing.
What would be the point of that, I wonder, like evolutionarily?
I think it has to do with being able to knock up women all within a tribe all at the same time, so their children tend to be at roughly the same age, so they're nursing at the same time and can raise each other's children.
Okay, that is interesting. I have to think on that. Seriously, I swear to God.
Because that means you're ovulating at the same time as well.
I know it sounds weird that I'm filing away a whole thing about periods to think about later, but that's just that's one of those things that's like running like a heavy like a big application or something on your computer, and you're like, this is going to slow down my CPU. I got to do this video encoding later tonight. All right, so Mr. Venture Barker from the Alter Ego Society will join us here in a bit. We'll have clue number two for this week's Name That Snack contest from EH Vending. And Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Tuesday.
We got a shoplifter who got stuck in a doorway. We've got someone who died, and it will be sad. And we got a whole bunch of clowns in one place.
Awesome. That is all on the way. I had all this crap going on that I was supposed to talk about, and I don't even know what it was now. All I know is that I have a new fridge. That's the thing. People keep asking me. The only reason I'm bringing that up, it's not like people care about my fridge situation as such, but you know what this audience cares about, and this is why one of the many, many reasons why they're the best audience ever. You know what the audience, they are never happy, happier, than when they are doing, and they're really variations on a theme. This audience is never happier than when they are solving a problem and or correcting me and pointing out how wrong I am about something. Now, here's the great thing is that often those two things are connected. So, like, if I'm trying to fix the refrigerator, but instead of, like, cleaning off the coils, I'm, in fact, cleaning off the compressor in the back, which is a totally different thing, then they get to the best of both worlds, where they get to say, hey, idiot, first of all, you're wrong. You're cleaning off, a totally different part of the refrigerator. Secondly, here's how you actually solve that. So they are actually fixing the problem and then shaming me for my ignorance at once, and that is where this audience lives. That is, like, the sweet spot where they dwell. Here's what I found out. So everybody was trying to, you know, because the landlord was trying to get out of actually coming to the house to replace the fridge or, you know, to do any actual work to fix it just because, you know, because why do you work if you don't have to? So he kept telling me, he's like, well, have you tried to get in the back and clean off the coils or whatever? And so I cleaned off what I thought might be the coils, and then it turns out that it wasn't. It really was the compressor. Do you know where they keep the coils on refrigerators now?
On the bottom?
On the bottom. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
I mean, that means that nobody, by the way, including the repairman, can actually clean the coils off. I mean, unless the repair guy comes with a couple of his friends and a dolly, like the guy who just comes out to your place to change the Freon or whatever, even that guy can't clean off the coils now.
No, you'd have to pull it out and then tip it back and run the risk of, like, knocking it over entirely and
not even tip
killing
it back.
Someone.
You have to tip it back with a couple other guys, like, bolting it down, belting it to something, or put it on its back or lay it down on its side. And apparently, by the time the coils have actually gotten encrusted with, I think the scientific term is gunk, it is so thick on there that you can't do it anyway. So anyway, over the weekend, the landlord came over with a friend of his, and it was clearly a guy that he was paying in beer. You can just tell there's that dynamic sometimes. So it's a landlord and his friend of his, and you can tell that he's paying the guy in beer because the guy has given him lip the entire time. Because at one point, the landlord's like, so I guess I'm going to need some pliers to take this apart. And the guy, the guy that he brought with him, his friend was going, well, don't you leave the house with anything? God damn, you're useless. And I thought, whoa, that's interesting. That's not an employer-employee dynamic. That's a paid-with-beer dynamic. And so at one point, I asked the guy late in the afternoon, I said, so how much beer is it taking for you to get out of here to fix the fridge? And he's like, oh, I don't know. He's like, I tally that up at the end of the day. I let him know how much it's going to be. And I said, do you get to select the brand of beer? And the way that it kind of worked with them is that you could pick the brand of beer or you could kind of pick the amount as long as it was judged to be fair, but you couldn't pick both. So you could specify the brand, you could specify the amount, but then it was like the guy who actually bought the beer was like picking, you know, whatever the other factor.
So you can either have quantity or quality.
Exactly. And, you know, assuming that the guy's a friend is not going to screw you, you know, it's like, here's the thing. It's like when you help a guy, this is a part of the, I think, an international code among the brethren. If you're helping a guy move,
you have to buy him a pizza for one thing.
It's not just that you got to get him a pizza. If you are providing beer, which I think you must in most, unless you're moving into a monastery, if you're providing beer for the guys who help you move, they are allowed to complain about the brand or the temperature, but not both.
Okay.
Yeah, guy can go that. Like, what is this swill? Well, at least it's cold. Or they can say, well, it's good beer. Shame that you didn't bother to chill it for us beforehand, Fred. But you can't do both of those things. That makes you a dick. You can do one of those. So they come in, it's like they got the fridge and they're taking it apart. And first of all, it's that thing where Lara actually was taking a nap. She slept through most of this ordeal, which was fair enough because she actually got it before I did, and she put all of our existing food from the fridge onto the counters in the kitchen. And most of the stuff that had gone bad, we'd already thrown away or whatever. But you don't really appreciate how much crap you have that you don't actually use or eat or put on anything until you see it all in the kitchen counter. And you just say, my God, I'm just a dumb American who buys things that I don't. You know, why do I have half an inch of Kikkoman soy sauce like petrified, in the, but that I will never use, that I didn't buy, by the way, and that she didn't buy. We have no idea. I have never in my life purchased a bottle of soy sauce. Not once, ever, never. And she claims not to have purchased it either. So then we're looking at it to like, well, unless one of us is like, I don't know, humping an Asian, like, why would this be here? Why would we have... And it's not just that it's a bottle of soy sauce, it's that it's like an eighth of an inch or something. And I don't think it all evaporated, because it seems like that would take a long time. Why was it there? No one knows. Here's another thing we found in the back. It was just a big tube of jalapeno paste. I would never purchase that, because I would
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, it's like wasabi paste, but it's jalapeno paste. It's like toothpaste. You squeeze it out, I guess maybe put it on a sandwich or something, or maybe like a little cream cheese. I didn't buy it. She claims not to have bought it. No idea where it came from. Just there.
My friends used to get all bollocked up with bottles of bad salad dressing.
Yeah.
Because I had friends that would come over. Used to host friends every Saturday for like gaming and dinner. And often they would bring like salad, and then they would bring some kind of salad dressing. And it was usually something awful. And then there would be like a partial bottle of salad dressing. So, of course, that would go in the
fridge. You don't
want
to throw it out.
Yeah. And then like a year later, I'm like going, I've got like Thousand Island dressing and some kind of Newman's Own balsamic something and all this crap that I would never, ever eat.
Yeah, it's split into its component chemicals inside the bottle. And then you just end up throwing that stuff away anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're just looking at all of this crap there. And, you know, and anyway, so the landlord comes in with the guy and they have to disassemble the, you know, the old fridge. They have to take the doors off of it and whatever. And they're hauling it out. And then, of course, I'm having to be the guy of like, all right, left. No, you want to, no, to the, no, your other left. Turn it. All right, this way. And I'm having to guide them out of the kitchen because it's like it barely fits. I mean, it's just bare. Just, you can't even imagine how barely it fits. They get it out there. They haul the old fridge down my front steps. And then they, you know, and they're going to take it with them. So they got the truck there. So they just, you know, they leave the fridge kind of, you know, in front of the house. They go, they get the new fridge, which is in the back of the truck. And the new old fridge, I might add. So they bring the new old fridge on the dolly. They bring it up the stairs. But the new old fridge that they purchased, that they brought to put in the house, is wider than the other one. It gets in the door, but halfway in, it wedges on that little pneumatic cylindrical thing that keeps the screen door from slamming shut. And so now I am tasked. And by the way, this is just one of the rare moments where I felt manly, because the landlord just said, "Hey, do you happen to have like a Phillips head screwdriver with maybe like the ratchet end?" And amazingly enough, we did, and I knew where it was.
Wow!
Because my wife does all the home maintenance, and she has a large tool chest, and I know exactly where she keeps everything. And she was asleep, but I had seen it when I went down. What a pussy I am! I knew it because I'd seen it when I went down to do laundry. Mm. What's going on in my house?
You're a lady.
God damn, I really am. That's true, isn't it?
You are. You're a lady.
Well, whatever. As long as I feel pretty. But I go downstairs and I bring it up. And then later he's like, I don't know if it's going to fit. Do you have a tape measure? I'm like, do I ever go back downstairs to my wife's tool chest here, the Craftsman tape measure, bring it up? And then he asked for something else later on. It wasn't needle nose pliers, but it was like, you know, do you have a bevel set or, you know, whatever, some made up tool? And I went, yeah, sure. And I went down and I rooted around and I found what I thought was, I brought it up, sure, and it was the right thing. And so, like, he doesn't know. He never spent any time with me. So my landlord thinks that I am the manliest guy because he didn't have the tools. I had all three. And I went downstairs and I didn't.
The problem now, though, is that the next time something breaks,
he's going to ask me to fix it.
He's going to expect you to fix it.
I know, but that's the delayed punishment for this.
Well, just get your 3/4-inch ratchet set and you plug it in and
It's like when one time my dad would be like, "You want to go down to the hardware store and pick me up some 18-inch mollies?" I was just like, you're making that up. But so that's a problem for later. And I didn't spend enough time in the basement that it was obvious I was rooting around for whatever the thing was. Like, I went down, I found the thing, I brought it back up. So I'm having to, like, take the pneumatic thing off the screen door while the two of them are holding the refrigerator in place, you know, and then they're bringing it in. Here's the best and worst moment of the entire thing, though, and then we'll take a little brief break. We'll come back with Mr. Benjamin Barker from the Alter Ego Society. We got news coming up, Snuff Watch. We got the next clue for Name That Snack, all of that. The best and saddest moment of the entire day, this was a Sunday that this happened, is so they've now brought in the new fridge that is replacing the one, and they, of course, have to take the doors off and whatever to get it into the kitchen, and then they've lost the washers because they rolled underneath the stove, and it was a whole thing. So while they're doing that, I hear this knock at the door, and I answer the door, and it's a man we'll call, He gave me his card at one point, but we'll call him Hector. And so this guy, Hector, who I do not know, have never talked to before, have never seen before, is standing on my front porch, and he jerks a thumb over his shoulder. And then in the background, by the way, I see his own truck, in the back of it laden high with all kinds of things and just bits of, you know, piping and crap. And he says...
And he let me guess. He says, you want that old fridge?
Yes.
Yes, but he said it like, there's just no way to get around this. He said it like Aaron Duran's impersonation of the Frito Bandito. I mean, it's just, but he just said, so the fridge in the front yard, would you like me to, I haul away? And I thought, oh my God, he thinks that we're some family that just has a fridge sitting in the front yard of our house. And then I looked and I thought, my God, we're a family that just has a front yard with a fridge in it. And you instantly, in that moment though, here's the thing, I went from being... From sort of being judgmental of those folks that have the fridge or the bathtub in the front of the house, to instantly not being judgmental, because it occurred to me, you know why they do that? Because those things are goddamn heavy. And who, what are you going to stick it in the back of your Celica? I don't think so. I mean, there's just no, you know, what are you going to do? Well, I guess I'll just put this on the back of my Vespa and take it down to the... I mean, those fridges, like, they're filled with concrete.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, you know, you just go to some bust-out's house and he's got, like, you know, he's got, like, an old Frigidaire or possibly generations of them just in the backyard, like some sort of appliance graveyard, because those things are freaking heavy. So he says, you want me to take the fridge away from you? And I said the landlord's going to do it. And he kind of gave me the little narrowing of the sort of Manuel narrowing of the eyes. And I said, no, my landlord has brought me a new refrigerator. He will be taking the old refrigerator away. But thank you. I will keep your card. I appreciate the offer. And then, as Hector said, thank you. And he literally did a little tip of the hat. Like he did a little cowboy tip of the hat to me, turned on his heel. But you know what? He wasn't even two steps away. And I called that man back. Do you know why?
No.
What else was in my front yard, Don, low these many weeks?
I don't know.
Yes,
what
you
is
do.
I don't know.
My Christmas tree.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. And so here's the thing. It was
seriously?
Like it was like the universe sent Hector to me, you know, but for a purpose that he himself did not anticipate and which I did not initially realize. And I called him back and I said, pardon me, looking at the car, Hector. And I said, Christmas tree. And I pointed over to the, and by the way, it didn't even look like a Christmas tree at this point, because it's like the thing was just so bleached and pale and just washed out from the sun and the rain. It just looked like, a bunch of quilts that somebody had put together that were once green. And I said, Christmas tree, how much to take away the Christmas tree? And he said, and he looked at it and he looked at me and he goes, Christmas tree? And I said, no, that is a Christmas tree. Christmas tree. How much to take? And I realized that this is not what he does, because his truck was full of metal and whatever. And he looked at the tree and he looked at his truck and he looked at me, and you could just tell some things cross all kinds of cultural boundaries. You could tell that he suddenly just realized he was dealing with an idiot. That he just thought in his head, he was just thinking to himself, my God, what a piece of trash this white man is. What a horrible representative of his race this white man is in front of me. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We will take a break. We'll come back here with Mr. Ben Jabarker from the Alter Egos Society. Stay right there. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, the best thing ever in the history of stuff. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Trying to be a friend of mine, even a dog can shake hands.
To the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Coming up later on, we got your Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Clergy Watch, Snuff Watch, and clue number two for this week's EH Vending Name That Snot Contest. Oh, my God. Wait, hold on a second. Did I bring it in? Did
it
I leave it in the
like
car?
You said Name That Snot Contest.
No. I started to say Name That Snack Contest, and then this, and then that morphed and conflated with and then transmogrified into this whole other thing. As opposed to the deal it was supposed to be, it became another another sound altogether. It was going to be the first thing, then the second, then it became a third thing, and the third thing was me saying, oh my God, because you know what's in the car that I failed to get during the last break, but which I will bring up in a subsequent break for your enjoyment and amusement?
Snickers bars with peanut butter
in
them?
It's the peanut butter Snickers bar. For the love of holy Christ. It's like, seriously, it's... I'm not even going to say another word. I'm going to let you just experience it for yourself. That is that's downstairs in my car, in my automobile. So I'll bring it up.
So it's trunk snacks.
No, it's not in the trunk.
Okay.
No. What am I, a savage? Pizza goes in the trunk. Candy bars go in the back seat.
Okay.
I don't know what kind of family you were raised by.
Well, I didn't know how you organized your snacks in the various compartments of your car.
Dawn.
Like falafel goes under the seat. I'm not sure.
A place for everything and everything in its place.
Croissants, those go in the glove compartment.
In just a few moments, we'll be joined by Mr. Benji Barker from the Alter Ego Society. We'll talk about Project Mayor Man. Before we do anything else, we should get a little bit of that actual news done. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor providing you whimsy and information.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston has given approval for a former soldier to receive a faceplant transplant. Army Private Mitch
Receive a faceplant. That would just be
a
cruel.
Faceplant.
After serving your country, it's our privilege to present you the... BAM!
Army Private Mitch Hunter of Indianapolis was left severely disfigured after saving a woman's life during a car accident 10 years ago. Hunter pushed a live wire off of a woman. He now lives with a severely scarred face and a prosthetic nose and leg. And there is a photograph of him as he currently is in...
Now, is this the thing you told me not to look at?
I told you not to look
at it. Is it because it's going
to
be horrifying?
It's fascinating. And yes, it's horrifying, but it is fascinating. Particularly, I have to admit, I'm fascinated by his prosthetic nose.
Is this a thing I really want to see?
Yes.
Okay, now you're lying right now.
No, you
want to
see it. You want to see it.
Really?
I know you. You want to see this.
Okay. See,
plus
how
the fact
you
that the guy is getting a face. He's getting a new face.
How can you, quote, know, end quote, that I want to see it if I don't even know?
I've known you long enough to know that if there's a guy with a prosthetic nose who needs
point.
A face transplant, you want to see what it looks like.
I can't really argue that point. All right, hold on a second. Let me just and so this – now, maybe I misheard the beginning of this. So he was injured how?
He saved a woman's life during a car accident 10 years ago.
Okay.
And, yes, and has a severely scarred face and a prosthetic nose.
How is it that he was scarred while saving her from a car accident? I guess I'm unclear unless he was the one – he wasn't in the accident, it doesn't sound like.
I really don't know.
Or was he scarred because of something else, but then they are rewarding that
– Well, no. The way this is written, I believe the accident occurred during the car accident. He was disfigured after saving
Maybe it was a burning
life.
Sort of a thing or – You wouldn't just burn your nose off, though. I mean, you really – that almost is like you have
Maybe
to make an appointment for that.
Maybe he was also in the accident, and then he also – I don't know.
This really just raises more questions than it answers,
Don. I'm just telling you everything I know here.
Oh, this isn't bad. I've seen way worse. He's not like that chimp lady.
No, he's not like the chimp lady at all.
She had to wear like one of those beekeeper hat things.
But look at his nose, though. He's got like a fake nose, which is, I find, kind of fascinating.
Well, he's got – you know what he's got? He's got the nose version of that thing that the guy on Boardwalk Empire wears. But it's like just the nose part. You know, where it's sort of like a flesh covered, colored piece of plastic or metal that they just go to, and they just stick it on the front. It makes you wonder, though. So, if he's got a prosthetic nose, then, I mean, if you were to remove the nose right now, like, is it just like a is he like an alien gray under there where it's just like some breathing holes they punched in, or is it like just a huge hole?
Maybe.
Can he store coins in
it? Like Michael Jackson, he just has a blowhole.
Well, because you can't just be missing. You can't just have a big opening in the front of your face because it seems like that's a. That's one of those
that's why you got the fake nose on the front.
But I'm saying underneath – well, okay.
Know.
Well, I guess, but it doesn't look like
– I'm sharing this with our guest who hasn't come on mic yet.
Well, let's just – hold on. Let me just find the appropriate theme music, and we'll bring on Benji Barker so we can get his – let's see if I've got the – hold on. Let me find this. No, I think this may just be a thing of a guy going thump.
Yeah,
wait, hold on a second.
I'm just hearing thump.
Wait. There we go. You know, those 12-inch club mixes, they really screw me every time. They never begin when you win. The post is always so much farther in. It's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from the Alter Ego Society. Mr. I'm really sorry about this in every way. Mr. It's like I have to time my...
Did you actually listen to this before you chose it?
Well, you'd think I would, wouldn't you?
You'd think.
It's possible that I didn't listen to all of it.
Okay.
I may have just given it a bit of an aural skim. Hello. So afraid that, like, the Soul Sisters are going to interrupt everything I say now. Benjamin Barker from the Alter Ego Society. Hello, sir. How are you on this fine Tuesday?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Let me just make this go away. Okay. Yeah, it was ill-advised. So I'm going to put that in the B pile. So we're going to talk about Project Mayor Matt here in just a moment.
Sure.
I should take this opportunity to say that coming up this Sunday on Outlook Portland, which airs on Cable Channel 3, that is Northwest 32, or the Gossip Girl Network, is going to be another installment of Outlook Portland, where, among other things, we talk about actually, we have James Sinclair and Aaron Duran on to talk about La Brujera, which is Aaron's the first comic book to come out from Geek in the City Comics. And then as part of that, we talk about the whole idea of superheroes and the Alter Ego Society. And so you are on talking about Project Mayor Man. So we will discuss that here in a moment. Did you show him the photo of the nose guy?
I did.
Now, let me ask you this. Does it seem as though the prosthetic is not really – it's not a prosthetic in the sense that they have, like, attached it to him permanently, like when you get, like, I don't know, like when they stitch something onto you. It seems almost like he sticks it on in the morning and then takes it off at night.
That's probably the case. I mean, I know with that stuff I've heard of, you know, magnets being involved in that sort of thing.
Okay. I've heard that, too. So I don't know where, though. I don't know where I heard that. But you having said that, it triggered something
so
in my head.
Implant one side of the magnet
under your skin.
Oh. Yeah.
Just under your skin.
Oh, under your
skin. Then it goes. And then the prosthetic thing has magnets in it.
Yes.
But I don't know why I know that. Maybe it was because of the Oprah woman, the woman that got where the chimpanzee came and took all of her face off.
Didn't come back.
So it makes me wonder, though, underneath that, because at the risk of using a phrase that got us into some trouble, I think last week, it seems like your head is a closed system. And if you've got a big hole in the front of your face, like, isn't, like, you can't drink something, right? Because it would just, it could just fall right out of your nose or something.
Do you drink through your nose?
Well, sometimes. Well, no. But I mean, if you're...
You've got a big open slot in the front of your face now.
Yeah, but there's
let's keep it civil, huh?
But there's your mom's an open slot. But there's a series of tubes that which I didn't mean to do that just now. I really didn't. I swear to God, I just kind of stepped into that. I backed into it unknowingly. I'm just fascinated by whether they have to seal the rest of it up to keep like your swallowing, for example, is dependent upon the fact that your nose narrows to a couple of tubes, that it's not just open, because you have to form a momentary vacuum to get some of that food to go down to start the peristolic process. So I'm curious about what lurks under – who knows what lurks underneath the prosthetic nose? See, I did it again where I put nose twice there, and it wasn't the thing I was intending to do.
No.
Yeah,
got a whole lot of refrigerator magnet poetry stuff going on with my lexicon today. It's all very interesting. All right, so they're giving the guy – this is the nose they've given him, or they're giving him something after
this?
No,
he's going to be – he's been approved for an actual face transplant, and now he's waiting for a donor, about which he says, that kind of does make me feel bad. I don't want to have to wait for someone to pass away.
Well –
But you got to wait for somebody to die before you can take their face.
I was just going to say, it's not like you can just go cut the thing off because they're going to wriggle and then it won't be a clean incision.
So, yeah. So there have been 3 face transplants performed in the United States so far, one of them at this particular hospital, which is one of only 2 hospitals in the country which are approved to do so.
So have I talked to you about the waiting for somebody to die essay? I have not.
I don't think so, no.
So I had a friend of mine, a friend of a friend, actually, who got busted for DUI some years ago. And one of the things was that part of the punishment, he had to write like a whole, like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to drink and drive. And then he had to, like, pay a fine. And I think he was, like, a night in jail or something. But one of the – but it was – he got one of those judges where, like, the judge tries to be sort of colorful. He got one of those Boston – one of those Boston legal judges where they're going to do something a little kooky this time. And you're going to be handcuffed to a baboon or whatever. But the deal was that in addition to all of this other stuff, he had to go down – to the city morgue at some point, and he had to see someone who was killed by a drunk driver. The judge is like, you got to go down to the morgue, and you're going to have to see someone who is a victim of someone like yourself, and which is a fair punishment, whatever. But the weirdest part was he said that the court actually, after imposing this sentence, then told him he could do it anytime in the next 60 days. And he said the weirdest part was walking around town realizing that someone did not know they were going to be his court punishment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like, he's like, well, I was just going out of town. He's like, so I wasn't going to be able to do it for a few weeks. So by definition, whoever I was going to end up seeing, like, on the slab didn't know it because they were still alive. And that there was somebody out there walking around with, like, a sort of frightener's number on their head. And they just had they had no notion of that, which is just, that'll weird you out.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can, you know, but I mean, a nose is a nose, friend. It's not like they grow on trees anywhere. So
people trees
that we know of.
Well, I mean, not yet. That's because we haven't gotten the Japanese involved. They, though, you name
no,
something.
We can grow them on mice, but we can't grow them on trees.
But see, if you could just create a mouse tree and then it solves 2 things at once. You ever need a mouse? Bam, on the tree.
And then ears and noses on the mice that are hanging on the trees. And it's everything.
Am I supposed to follow that with something? Is that like a house that Jack built? Sort of a thing? Okay, I didn't know if you were throwing it to me like in a... All right. Well, let's do one more here, and then we'll talk about the project. We'll talk about Project Mayor Man.
Let's do our clown watch.
Here's your clown watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is Don Taylor with your clown watch.
The 26th annual Show Me Clowns for Jesus National Conference takes place Friday through Sunday in Springfield with a gala faculty show open to the public from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Saturday in the main convention hall.
What's the first word in the name of the event?
Show Me Clowns for Jesus National Conference.
Is that an imperative statement, like you're ordering someone to do it?
Yes.
Show me the clown.
Show me clowns for Jesus.
Okay.
The conference, with this year's theme, Clown School Days, DAZE, is a multi-level, non-denominational training and equipping school for experienced clowns, those interested in clowning, and others wanting to use creative arts to bring joy and the message of hope in Jesus Christ to their communities through clowning.
All right, I got like 100 questions. Show me clowns for Jesus.
Show me clowns for Jesus.
Is that First of all, it's like you're asking somebody to do a balloon animal or an impression of some kind for you, you know? Or like they can make ASCII art. And you go, ooh, now show me clowns for Jesus. So is it show me clowns for the benefit of Jesus, or is it find me some clowns who are in favor of Christ? Which the sentence is sort of written strangely. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Honest to God, the group is called Show Me Clowns for Jesus. You can find them at showmeclownsforjesus.org.
But I mean, is a show me clown a specific kind of clown? The grammar syntax
is
confusing.
It's show me clowns for Jesus. I don't know.
Okay.
It confuses me as well.
All right.
There will be special intensive classes with guest faculty.
Oh, I think they're all intensive classes.
Including techniques of face painting, design and application, and balloon creations.
Plus hiding the body.
On Thursday evenings, training is available in how to do a wholesome, non-religious show for school children called Safety is No Joke.
Muffling your victim's screams.
And then the group of trainees and instructors will go to local elementary schools to perform the show for students.
Did they perform miracles as well?
I think the miracle is that they can make a cheerleader fit into a bag that's much smaller than you might imagine.
there's also
I'm just guessing. I could be way off.
Also sessions on very topics, including God's sense of humor, how to be a balloon entertainer, and five workshop sessions followed by contemporary praise worship, clown worship, and that's in quotation marks, and commissioning of the new clowns.
Is clown worship what I think it is, Don?
I can only imagine.
What was the first of the workshops there?
In this last batch,
yeah,
was called God's Sense of Humor.
Oh, I think God has a sense of humor. I mean, the fact that he delivered this story into your hands to be read by you. Don has a little bit of a coulrophobia over there. She's not a fan of the clowns. Really? You as well?
Oh, I can't stand them. I mean, have you ever seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Have I ever seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Okay. I'm younger.
Am I not a man? Do I not bleed if cut? Do I not laugh if amused? Okay, when did you experience the?
Like I say, I'm pretty young, so I saw it probably when I was about 8.
Oh,
and did that give you the fear of clowns? Is it because of that film?
Well, no, it's just exacerbated. It's just one more experience with clowns, and they're all horrible.
Well, because for a lot of people in the older generation, it was Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. My friend Lee, a girl I went to high school with, she was like utterly just wrecked, just destroyed by that movie. And Poltergeist, I think, I don't know if she would have developed it. It's that really is like a nature nurture thing. I don't really know if she would have developed the clown fear anyway, but this just accelerated the process like hormones, or if it was just sort of she was going along fine one day and then Steven Spielberg just got in there and started monkeying around and then, you know, and then suddenly clown fear.
Yeah.
So Killer Clowns from Outer Space, strangely enough, was not terrifying. I mean, I'm not afraid of clowns, but it wasn't really it didn't seem that terrifying to me only because they don't look like traditional Earth clowns.
That's true. I actually think Earth clowns look a lot scarier.
Yeah, well, because they're, you know.
They're not right. I mean, you look at them and, I mean, they're so happy and set. They're just grotesque.
Yeah, they really are. I will tell you, there's the one indisputably terrifying moment in Killer Clowns from Outer Space is the clown outside the burger place when he's like gesticulating at the girl. He's curling the finger to get her to come outside onto the playground.
Yeah.
That weirds me.
Yeah.
And
we all know any clown will do that if given the chance.
Well, no, that's the thing. It's like you can't turn your backs on them. They are not trustworthy. Clowns are, I would say any clown is just, they are one bad day away from putting you inside a sealed up steamer trunk. I mean, really, if you just...
They're half a bad day away.
I've told Don this story before, but I guess I was coming back from... actually, it's the same way if you come back to Portland from Outlook Portland. I was on, I guess, the 26 or whatever, and you go by Sylvan and the zoo and whatever. And I forget why I was in goddamn Beaverton to begin with, but it was at night. And so normally that's a happy trip. Like, I'm leaving Beaverton. You know, what could possibly be better? And so I'm coming back to where civilization is, and it's dark. And, you know, you get – like when you're on the 26 and you're coming back in and you're getting ready to go in that tunnel where you can get onto the whatever, the 84, like that's one of those things where you realize how powerless you are against nature, because there's no amount of lights that is going to make it seem bright outside. It's the middle of the goddamn night.
Right.
So I'm driving along and amusing myself and just, you know, and living my life. And there's that thing when you're driving usually at a red light, but not always, where you will get in your peripheral vision, you will see that there's someone next to you.
Right.
And it is human nature, again, especially if stopped, but not always, where you say, well, I wonder who's sharing the highway with me this fine evening. And you look over and you see who it is. So I'm driving along in the 26th, and there's this car comes up in my peripheral vision. And I'm driving along, and I thought, well, there was a car, and I just sort of looked to see who it is. And I swear to God, there was a clown in the car next to me. And I don't know whether the clown was on its way to entertain or if it was just like on it, like evidence disposal run or something,
yeah, yeah.
Or got it, you know, needed more Visqueen sheeting. But the clown is in the car next to me. And the car wasn't like, it didn't say like, you know,
Bumpy's happy clown.
Heckle's
car.
Clown service. Yeah, it didn't say that. It didn't Bungie the clown. It just was a clown in a car and like a small, like a Volkswagen Rabbit sort of a thing. And I looked straight ahead, and it was that thing of sort of like, okay, now if I look back and the clown is gone, is that going to be better or worse? Okay,
right.
Let's find out. And then I turn back and I look again, and this time I just sort of looked for a minute, just trying to figure like, what is up? Why is somebody? And the clown, I swear to God, just slowly turned to me and smiled and waved. And just, you know,
yeah.
And it was all in one slow, fluid motion, the turn of the head, the smile, and then like waving the hand at me. And I think I actually just like – I think I cursed a little bit, and I think I actually I may have just hit the brake and just let the clown sort of go on its way. I don't really remember much else, but I remember just at one point being away from the clown, and I think I slowed down and just let the clown get wherever it was going to go.
Yeah, well, it's better than being away from Beaverton.
Well, if you go to the Show Me Clown for Jesus thing, you'll get an example of the kind of horror show people that will be teaching your classes,
no.
Like this guy.
Oh, wow, no. Well, he looks evil without makeup. Look at that guy.
Yeah,
in the
I know.
Far
look
left.
At him. Look at the crazy eyes.
You know what he looks like? He looks like Ted Haggard. He looks like the crystal meth not gay preacher.
Yeah,
that's unnerving. Where is this happening so I can avoid it?
This is in Springfield, Ohio.
Okay.
The mission statement, by the way, the purpose of Show Me Clowns for Jesus is to cultivate learning opportunities to develop and refine Christian clowning skills, to encourage high ethical, professional, and Christian clown standards, and to promote clowning as a ministry to bring joy and the love of Jesus to others.
So, like, if you get kicked in the pants, you turn the other cheek, that sort of thing?
No. I'm sorry. I wasn't prepared. I didn't know there was... No, I don't know. My wah-wah's gone. That's only half of it. Okay. When is this happening again?
Next weekend.
Okay. I'm going to see if I can conjure up somebody in Ohio to talk to us about that. Can we be done with that?
Oh, please, yes.
Okay. That's the end of the... there's your clown watch for... Tuesday.
Oh.
Oh, God, is there more?
No, it's just like they have a Facebook page, and it's like most of the people who they have on Facebook have like their clown pictures as their Facebook
their clown
pictures.
Clown selves.
So, yeah.
I do not want to be a mutual friend.
Right. I don't ever, awesome. ever want to look at my Facebook page and see clowns. Ever.
Hey, did I tell you, by the way, that we're going to be having a guy on in the near future who will talk to us about why he almost became a rodeo clown? I think I mentioned that, Don Frost. See, rodeo clown. Okay, let me ask you this. Do rodeo clowns scare you?
Not in the same way, no.
I mean, if you went home and it was sitting on your bed, maybe. But I mean, just like in public. I mean,
again, it would depend upon the elaborateness of his makeup.
Is it the way they look?
Yeah.
See, to me, rodeo clowns exist in a separate genus almost. Yeah. It's like they're a totally different kind of clown.
I agree.
Like, I'm not scared of PTA ladies dressed up as clowns doing face painting at carnivals because I can look at them and realize that's not an actual clown. That's just somebody sort of dressed as a clown. To me, it's the actual professional clown because they are otherworldly. They are like some kind of a crazy being unto themselves.
That's
you know, it's one thing for somebody to put on some slapdash, faux clown makeup. It's nothing for someone to be a clown. And that's just horrifying.
So
it terrifies me.
And with rodeo clowns, you know, like they don't, you know, they're not going to like finish the day and, you know, come up to kids and like violate their personal space. They're going to like wash the makeup off with whiskey.
That's the thing is, rodeo clowns seem like it. It seems like they lead a sort of like manly, rough and tumble existence
in
a way that is not frightening.
And if you talked to a rodeo clown, they would probably just go, "Hey, how you doing? Yeah,
my name's Smitty.
I almost got killed back there. I've broken this leg in three places five times." Clown, you talk to like any other clown, they're going to be like, "Hey, how you doing?" And they're going to do a clown voice.
Really? Is that what it sounds like?
They're going to do some kind of horrible clown voice. And then you know that you're like inches from death.
I think the thing about the rodeo clown And I don't really know. I'm just sort of speculating. I think the thing about the rodeo clown, though, is that you recognize on some level that the rodeo clown, that's just the uniform of the trade.
Right.
Exactly.
That's not a guy who wants to dress up like a clown to satisfy some you know, to satisfy his dark passenger inside. That's a guy where it's like, hey, I guess you get the gig. You got to wear the makeup. What are you going to do?
Yeah, he's like a stunt man in makeup.
Yeah.
That's really all he
is. He knows that is the job. It's like if you're an usher, you got to put on the usher uniform. If you're a baseball player, you put on stretchy pants. Rodeo clown, little grease paint, and plus, they don't go all out either. And there isn't as much diversity in the world of the rodeo clown, by which I mean they all have that same sort of straw hair hobo look.
Right.
There isn't like the whole, pointy smile buying some duct tape look that you find with some of your other clowning. Okay.
Well, it's the red lips, really. They're too big.
It's a little weirdly almost juggalo-like, It's like they're just, they're kind of cartoons of cowboys, running around.
That's different.
Don't you think that there should be
scary.
At some point there's probably going to be like a juggalo rodeo just so they can just so they can market it as such, sort of a there will inevitably be a song release called Just a Juggalo. It's just one of those things, like, you can't just let it sit there. So it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on, we got your Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, Clergy Watch clue number 2 for this week's EH Vending Name That Snack contest. We're here with Ben Jabarker, founder of what did we decide it was? It was founder, director, leader, overlord, maven, imperial ruler, omniscient director of
Correct.
The Alter Ego Society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a question that I don't know the answer to. I joked about this when we were on Outlook Portland, but is uh-huh. Alter Ego Society just a Portland thing? Are there branches in other cities?
It's just Portland. We don't have anything set up anywhere else.
Now, is that have you guys given any thought, or have there been other cities that have been like, we got to get us one of those?
We're just trying to establish ourselves here. I mean, there have been people that came from the internet.
People that come from the internet. Believe you me,
they that said, "Oh, I wish that was happening in my town." I mean, but that's really the extent of it.
So the Alter, and for those of you who, as they say in the Phantom, for those who came in late, so the Alter Ego Society, you actually have a mission statement that you read on Outlook Portland. What is your deal?
The Alter Ego Society hosts costumed events for charity and just sheer enjoyment. Encouraging people to gather dressed as homemade superheroes and supervillains, Alter Ego Society promotes community, creativity, and fun, all while supporting the mentoring of homeless youth.
So now, are you – you must be aware of this. Like in other cities, and I think in Seattle, Don, was this a couple weeks ago? There was the guys who were like fighting
–
the real-life superheroes.
The fighting crime guys who were sort of hilarious and just seemed like a class action lawsuit waiting to happen. Like they just – that's going to be a thing where the next of kin is just, it's going to be all over the news one of these days.
Yeah.
And do you ever worry that you're going to get sort of lumped into that?
Oh, we already have been a little bit. I mean, sometimes people refer to us as real life superheroes, and we're like, no, we're pretend superheroes. It's so much more fun.
Because you don't want to be like those guys at the beginning of The Dark Knight. They're in the garage,
exactly.
just getting the Rottweiler set on them.
But why do you get to do it?
Because I've got a mask.
Or whatever,
So Project Mirrorman is happening, is it all through February?
That's right. That's when the submission period is.
And whose idea was this? So how did the idea of coming up with a superhero costume for Sam Adams actually start?
That was Indigo Kelly, the founder director of the Stumptown Comics Fest. So he was on the Twitters, and that sounded really horrible.
We won't tell anybody about that.
So he just was randomly tweeting and speculated, I wonder what it would take to get Sam Adams in a superhero costume at the Stumptown Comics Fest. And Sam Adams retweeted that and replied, a decent costume. So then, the wheels started turning, and Indigo contacted the mayor's office and contacted me.
That evening at Indigo Manor. And he was just sort of, by God, I've got it.
Exactly. I mean, it was when he approached me, I was very excited.
Now, Sam Adams he's really embraced comic book day or comic book month.
Yeah, actually, and I guess this actually started with Tom Potter, but every year for the past 3 years, April has been officially declared by the mayor Portland Comics Month.
Which is pretty great. I would say he's our most geek-friendly mayor
thus
far in Portland. Do you get the feeling, though, that, like, do you get the feeling that Sam Adams has, like, instead of a bat signal, there's like a tweet signal in the sky? Someone has sent something on the internet. Hold on. And he just, you know, away to my lair. And he just goes, because he immediately responds.
I know. I was, like, looking at his Twitter the other day, and somebody's like, nah, potholes. He's like, let me check on that. It's like, dude, where did you come from? There was no at Sam Adams in there, you know?
He lurks everywhere. He sees all.
Someone's noticed a pothole. Let me get on that.
I'm almost afraid. Like, I actually have, from time to time, I will be typing something or all, but, you know, like, again, like about a pothole or just someone or some civic thing. Mm-hmm. And I will get ready to, not even snarkily, just to sort of name check Sam Adams or just joke using it. And I have stopped myself for fear that he will see it and just immediately, like jump out from behind an ash can and, you know, hello, citizen. And you know, just
right.
sort of, like he kind of lurks all around. So the submissions are taken all the way through February. And do people need to submit like actual designs with measurements and with everything, or is it just sketch?
No. Just a sketch. Draw a sketch of a superhero costume. It doesn't even need to be mayor related in any way. Just make an awesome costume, because I'm going to help build this thing. So I want to make an awesome costume.
So this is actually a good point. So the superhero costume for Sam Adams, whatever it might be, is not necessarily going to be Mayor Man as such.
Right. That's just the name of the project.
So the actual, you could name the, so somebody submitted a costume, they could also name that superhero that they created the costume for.
Yeah, submit the name. We reserve the right to name it. Like, if it's a really awesome costume, but it's named, like, you know, Snuffle.
No one wants anything called. Yeah.
I mean, the costume can still win, but we might just rename it
We should also give the overarching note at this point that it's family friendly at the discretion of the judges. So don't be like a jackass when you're submitting something.
Exactly.
So you can name the superhero. There's the superhero costume, and then does he need to have a superpower?
Doesn't need to, but can. I mean, really, it's mostly just about the costume. If you draw the costume from the front, back, and side, it can be a sloppy sketch. You know, just as long as
you get the general gist of it.
Exactly. And then just email that to us at, mayormanpdx@gmail.com.
Okay. And the website is Alter Egos Society.
Yeah, alteregosociety.com. And that has the full contest details on there.
Now, you are the one who's going to be helping to make the costume.
Yes.
Sounds like a silly question, but I mean, so what do you do? Just like a regular sewing machine? Or like, what do you, I have no idea how you go about making, it seems like a specialized kind of of stitching that's going on there.
Well, that really depends on what kind of costumes people come up with. We're probably going to be, there's almost definitely going to be sewing involved, but I'm going to try and find some, you know, good fabric so it's not just boring old spandex. But we can also do stuff like, some plastic fabrication and stuff like that. So, like, you can get kind of elaborate if, you know, he has a big robot arm or something.
Or like a fin or something, you know, or like a cowl. Like, you can't just go to the dress barn and get a pattern for a cowl.
Right.
You gotta find a
molded chest piece and he has, like, six nipples.
Like, he doesn't have six nipples now. Please, Don. So Project Mayor Man is going on all the way through February. And then when is the actual Stumptown Comics Festival?
The Stumptown Comics Fest is during, April 16th and 17th.
April 16th and 17th. And where is that happening?
That's going to be happening at the Oregon Convention Center.
All right, awesome.
And Sam Adams will actually be there to pose in costume with the winning design on April 16th, the first day of the fest.
And then this is all going to benefit PAIR.
Yeah, so we're going to do suggested donations for people to get their picture taken with the mayor. Also, we're going to be having posters done by a prominent local artist who we're still not there yet.
Is this one of those things where you haven't decided or you can't say?
We haven't decided. Okay. I'll be honest. I should have just said we can't.
You should have just said that you are going to be amazed. We can't publicly confirm now.
Right.
You have no idea.
Right.
Because then there's going to be some guy at home going like, well, damn, I got to get me some of that action. So it's
yeah, no. So you'll actually get a poster. You can buy a poster that has the mayor in winning costume. We'll sell those. All the money will go to PAIR, who mentors homeless youth, and they're awesome.
This really is the sort of thing, though, I mentioned earlier in the show that we should just – it makes you want to just call other cities at random and just taunt them for being lame,
yeah,
you know?
Totally.
I mean, really, if you had told me when I was growing – I grew up in this this town called Kennewick, Washington, which is it's a dreadful place. And if I had – if you had told me at some point – I don't know if I'm glad that I didn't know or if I wish I had known that I would one day live in a city where I swear to God they're going to be putting the mayor in a superhero costume because he himself suggested it. I mean, I don't know that I would have believed it. There's no such place. You're filling my head with lies. I don't know that I ever would have conceived that I would have lived in a town that does that sort of a thing.
I know. It was awesome. Like, I got out of a meeting at the mayor's office with his staff, and I just thanked them. I'm like, you know, thank you. You've helped me fulfill a childhood dream I never knew I had.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, how many people can say, like, I made the mayor's superhero costume? Like, no one ever. I mean, you are the first person, really, like, in the history of recorded man, I think, to say that. So
that might be true.
I'll put it this way. You're the first person not made of tiny little dots to have said that. So congratulations, my friend.
Sure.
Benjamin Barker is founder of the Alter Egos Society. Find out more at alteregossociety.com.
And I just wanted to throw in real quick. I forgot all about this, but I forgot to mention this actually on Outlook Portland. But there is a prize for this. There's a $100 cash prize, and also you get free tickets to the Stumptown Comics Fest.
Fantastic.
And it is this is all sponsored by Things from Another World.
Excellent. Things from Another World. Whatever you're into, they have just the thing for your collection. You can find out more about Alter Ego Society at alteregossociety.com. AlterEgosSociety.com. Excellent. Don, let's do one more. Let's do the snuff watch here, and then we'll take a break and come back with more merriment and frivolity on the other side. So apparently, here's the thing, Benjamin. So apparently, a celebrity died, and I've been trying to guess who it is. And so what we've deduced, it's a male over the age of 60 in the world of entertainment, largely known from film, or I would know this person from film. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Burt Reynolds.
No.
Okay, let's see. From the United States?
Yes.
Sci-fi fantasy? Primarily.
No, I wouldn't say primarily, no. I'm trying to find what I did with it.
Part of a franchise.
I think you're getting way off. This is a performer that you know, but he's not necessarily like a hugely superstar.
He's not iconic necessarily.
Not necessarily.
All right. Well, we got to. Oh, let's. Do you have the actual?
Yeah, it's in here somewhere.
All right. Well,
I'll have it by 9 seconds. By the time we get there.
Here's your snuff watch for a Tuesday in the Rick Emerson Radio program. Don Taylor with your snuff watch for Tuesday.
Kenneth Mars, the actor who played two of Mel Brooks' most iconic cinematic characters, has died of pancreatic cancer. He was 75. Mars had been on Broadway and appeared in several hit TV shows like Get Smart and Gunsmoke when he was cast as the Hitler-worshipping playwright in Brooks' 1968 comedy, The Producers.
Okay.
6 years later, he was a one-armed, eye-patch-wearing Transylvania police inspector who leads the rioting townspeople against the monster in Young Frankenstein.
To the lumberyard! That guy.
Yes.
All right.
Mars also appeared in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Parallax View, and two Woody Allen films, among countless other credits. In recent years, he'd voiced many animated characters, including King Titan in The Little Mermaid, and had a recurring role on the TV series Malcolm in the Middle.
He's one of those guys, not exactly a character actor, but, you know, because he played a lot of different, you know, he didn't just stick to one sort of type of persona, but that he was one of those, you'd know him when you see him, guys. People go, you know, this guy here, and then you, goddamn, what did we do without Google image search? Before, where you'd just be like, well, he's that guy. He does that stuff. I remember somebody like years ago trying to tell me who, okay, let me ask you this right now. So we're here with Benjamin Barker from the Alter Ego Society and, of course, Don Taylor. Okay, because this is a room in which I can ask this question. Do we all have a favorite character actor?
Ooh.
I have so many.
You have to have. J.T.
Walsh.
See, that what I was going to say. J.T. Walsh is like, he's the gold standard to me. Now, dead, so it's like I feel like I got to get a new guy. But J.T. Walsh, I love that guy.
I'm just going to say Leonard Nimoy.
Well, Fair enough. He does exist within a certain realm.
He's not.
Certain
very
narrowly
broad. Yeah, no, I understand.
Narrowly defined kind of character, I suppose.
Yeah.
Mike Starr, who again, I would say he's that guy in, but it's like, you know, you just know him when you see him. Mike Starr is the guy who typically plays what on the East Coast they would call a schnook or a no goodnik. Sometimes, kind of a longshoreman kind of guy, or maybe a guy who chews on a cigar while chasing down a big story on the beat of the newspaper. He's sort of a rumpled kind of. Heavyset, kind of rough around the edges, sort of Jersey kind of a guy. And I dig that guy, but I didn't know his name for the longest time. And so I had a friend of mine who had a favorite character. And he's like, because we would occasionally be watching television, he would just say, oh, it's character actor Mike Starr. And I was never in the same room when he said it. I was always like in the kitchen or upstairs or something. And I would always say, who? Which one was Mike Starr? He's like, oh, you missed him. He's that guy. And I'm like, I don't know him. But now with Google image search, you can just solve that problem instantly. What a pain it must have been to be alive at a time other than now.
Seriously,
I mean,
yeah.
I lived in that time, and I don't remember hating it, but I must have. I mean, in retrospect, how sad my existence
was. Well, there was a lot of frustration, as I recall. There were a lot of conversations that ended with people like going, I'll remember the name of it later.
Or singing you a guitar solo so you could try to figure what the hell a song was. So in any event, so character actors is sort of – that's a – Doesn't it seem like there should be a documentary about character actors?
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
Or a series, even. I mean, like IFC or somebody. They could get some of that action. Mm-hmm. You do like because it's IFC, and so you know they'll kind of put on anything. You can you could do like a 15-minute show, and you do it every night or every Friday. Like between reruns of the Henry Rollins thing, you know, and whatever. They just put on a 15-minute show about like character actor so-and-so talks about. And then they show like a little montage of his roles.
Tonight, Vito Scotti.
Yeah, because you're just – because the thing about those guys is they've all been in 900 movies.
Yeah.
So there would be a lot and I think it would be legitimately I think not just impressive, but I think actually educational to people. I think people mm-hmm. probably don't realize how much – because here's the thing. If you're a good character actor, you'll have work like way longer than most mainstream or A-list actors have work. At least at that level. No one stays an A-lister forever. Most people don't. But a character actor can stay. That guy can get work forever. Here's another guy. Give me the name you just mentioned.
Vito Scotti?
Is that the guy from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and also Better Off Dead? Big, tall, weird-looking guy?
Oh, no. That's
He's the guy. He's the professor that wants to that wants to ask Beth out in Better Off Dead, and he's also he's also in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He is also Scanlan, I think, who's one of the chronics who doesn't want to take his meds. But you know what I'm talking. He's the guy that puts the curse on Angel in season 2 of Buffy.
It's Vincent something, isn't it? Vincent Schiavelli.
Is that guy's name?
Vincent Schiavelli.
Yeah, that guy that says it is not justice we serve, but vengeance. That guy, and I've now become the thing where I'm going, that guy, come on. I think people would be astounded at the number of different roles that you see. And it's almost not even right to call him a character actor because the three roles I just named, they're all different. I mean, they're all worlds apart from each other.
Yeah, but I think the thing when you get to a character actor, you're talking about someone that is recognizable, who does work a lot, a successful character, but people don't necessarily know his name. I mean, people who are pop culture geeks, you know, you say, Stephen Tobolowsky, and they know who Stephen Tobolowsky is. But I think your average, like, person, you say, Stephen Tobolowsky, they don't know who you mean. But if you point at him and go, that guy, they're like, oh, yeah, that guy. So
excellent. I love this show. all right. Did we close the Snuffwatch?
No.
All right. Are you showing me a thing?
I was going to show you Vito Scotti. If you see, that's Vito Scotti. He mostly worked in the 60s. He always played like little Mexican guys and Italian waiters.
Now, it says he was in The Godfather, because that's the Godfather wiki you're looking at right there.
He was Nazarene in The Godfather.
In the original Godfather?
Apparently so.
Character of Nazarene.
I don't know.
Here's, by the way, and just since we're here with Benja Barker from the Alter Ego Society.
But he was in hundreds and hundreds of movies.
Oh, I totally know that guy. Herbie Goes Bananas.
Yeah.
Here's why this is my instant karma for not recognizing that guy from being The Godfather. So this is a thing inside a thing inside a thing. So I swear to God, we'll take a break after this because I'm already getting like messages saying people noting that their bodies require a visit to the facilities. But that's just going to have to wait because this is more important. So, Dawn, let me ask you this. Do you know the spaghetti cat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See? So why is it that, like, everybody on it's one of two things. It's either that it's just like you and Cheryl who knew the Spaghetti Cat, or we had this strange conglomeration of people at Outlook Portland on Monday,
right,
which is not like we're not – it's not like we're not down with the kids and their popular culture, because it was Aaron Duran and James Sinclair and Benja and myself, and none of us knew what the Spaghetti Cat was. And Cheryl was doing that whole, like, come on thing where she was just agog that we didn't know Spaghetti Cat.
The only reason I know about Spaghetti Cat is that they made a big deal about it on The Soup.
Okay.
I wouldn't have known about it on the internet, and but back when I used to watch The Soup religiously, they went through this whole period where they did a whole Spaghetti Cat thing, and then they created a Spaghetti Cat puppet that had, like, thing, and we wheel it out every once in a while, and it's Spaghetti Cat, and Joel McHale would, like, interact with Cat.
Missed the whole thing. I must have been out of the country or something. So, yeah, so, like, the five of us, and again, we're big dorks, we didn't know it, and so Cheryl was just astounded, and so then, like, 5 seconds later, though, I think in reference to not knowing Spaghetti Cat, I actually shouted toward the back of the studio. I said, I'm smart, not like they say. And everybody, you know, and everybody goes, yeah, you know. and Cheryl says, I don't get it. What were you doing just there? And we all went, oh, come on. And then we all just like turned on her like jackals.
Yeah,
it was like
totally
a pecking party. It was like we just found the weak chick and pecking at her in the nest about her. She didn't know something from The Godfather. Right. And so, of course, my instant karma now is that I didn't recognize that guy from The Godfather right there. You happy now, you damn damn Spaghetti Cat taunting
universe?
Noun.
Yeah.
It was about Cheryl. A tauntress.
Okay. Well, it's not like Cheryl had anything to do with me showing you the picture from The Godfather.
No, but it's all tied together.
It's all tied together.
Don't you see? There's one thread that goes through it all.
It blew out a little bit.
It binds the universe together, Don.
All right.
Somebody says, what? No love for M. Emmett Walsh.
He would have been, well, I said J.T. Walsh. So, you know, I was in the family.
You know they're different people.
Yes, but they're related.
How about, are they really related?
Yes.
Am I my father?
M. Emmett Walsh and J.T. Walsh are related?
Yes.
What is the nature of their relation? I'm not disputing it. I just didn't know that.
They may be brothers. I can't remember, but they are related.
What are the odds you're making this up? Are they like 1 in 3 or higher?
I would say that the odds that I'm making it on are completely...
Let's do this Jeopardy Watson style. How confident are you percentage-wise, 0 to 100, in your answer?
I'll have to say I'm 75% confident. I could be like crazy mistaken, like it's something I dreamed once.
I thought you were just naming people named Walsh, and I was going to say Adam, so you spoiled that particular bit of horror and or humor. Did you anybody? Did we all watch? Well, you didn't, Tom. Did you watch the Jeopardy and the watching the computer on Jeopardy?
No, I didn't. I've only.
It's on the YouTube. You can watch it there. It's okay. Freaking awesome. All right, we should probably just take a break here, because the show is just starting to – I'm losing the tenuous grasp of control that I have. So coming up here in just a few, we'll have – let's see. We got your Clergy Watch coming out, Taser Watch, and clue number 2 for this week's Name That Snack contest. That is all on the way. Benjamin Barker, Alter Ego Society. You can find out more about them and Project Mayor Man by going to Alter Egos Society, just like it sounds, AlterEgosSociety, AlterEgosSociety.com. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We go back after this. You stay right here. There's the Rick Emerson Radio Program, the home of goodness and light for everyone.
You're
stay right
listening
there.
To the Emerson News Network.
Rolling Stone, Rolling Stone, Rolling Stone, cover of the Rolling Stone.
Singers, we got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go. We sing about beauty and we sing about truth. $10 million a show. We take all kind of pills that give all kind of thrills, but the thrill that we've never known is the thrill that it gets you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
My smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone. kitty who embroiders on my jeans. I got my poor old gray-haired daddy driving my limousine. Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown. Like a blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my smiling face on the cover. Got a lot of little teenage blue-eyed groupies who do anything we say. We got a genuine Indian guru, he's teaching us a better way. We got all the friends that money can buy, so we never have to be alone. And we keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of a Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I want to see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I want to buy 5 copies for my brother. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. Wanna see my picture on the cover. Gonna buy 5 copies for my mother. See my smiling face. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. On the cover of the Rolling
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm so winded. I had to run like 15 feet to the car. You know what I've got here, Don?
Is that?
It's the Snickers peanut butter. And so here's the thing they do. They've, in addition to launching this new candy bar, which is small, wide as, but smaller than, shorter than, I guess, a regular Snickers bar.
Okay.
But they've also developed, at the same time, concurrent to this new marketing promotion to mask the fact that you're getting less for your money. It's called the Twist to Close. And so it's not one bar. It's actually two. It's like you took a Snickers bar and made it, cut it in half. And so the whole shtick, though, is that you take one and then you twist the bag to close it and save another one for later.
Yeah, like that's going to happen.
And A, no one does that. B, the only way you can do that is because there's a big space between the two bars, and it's already shorter than a regular Snickers bar, so they're just horking you with this thing. But, but it's so tasty.
How much does it weigh? What is the...
The total weight is 1.78 ounces.
Ah, there we go.
I don't know what your average Snicker bar weighs.
I'm looking right now.
I almost brought with me, but I decided to wait, and I'll do it on the Friday, or on the morrow. I was going to bring some of those Hershey's drops as well, but those things are good. I mean, they basically just taste like a Hershey bar, but they've got this tiny little layer of like a sugary coating on it. This, though, is a totally different thing.
Well, the Snickers bar, according to the Wikipedia for Snickers, the change to duos, as these are called, duos.
Is that what the two squares is a duo?
Right.
Okay.
It reduced the weight from 3.5 to 3.29 ounces.
Okay. So it is by not only making it a little shorter, I think, on each end, but also cutting it in the middle, making it two separate pieces.
Because there's that actually little, a little bit smaller.
Like a gap of like a quarter inch or something. All right. Well, this is a good time to talk about EH Vending and the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. Isn't it, Don?
It is indeed.
All right. Hold on a second. Okay. Boy, I'm out of shape. I had to go to the car because I left the Snickers bar in there, and I swear to God, the car is like, it's right outside the door.
Yeah, it's you parked pretty close for you. You usually park further away, but it was pretty close today.
And the door is at the bottom of, I think, seven stairs. And the stairs are right outside the door, which is in turn 5 feet from me.
Yeah.
And I'm just coming back up. So it's time for the EH Vending Name That Snack Clue of the Day. You can find out more about EH Vending by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. You can also call them if you like, if that's your pleasure. You can call the owner. Josh is his name, and he's a longtime listener of the Rick Emerson Show, so he's sort of an extended member of the family as well. Call him at 360-816-1853. That's 360-816-1853. Or you can call James, his sales manager, at 503-897-8204. That is 503-897-8204. And we've talked a lot about places where maybe you don't have a vending machine, or if you are an employee someplace, you work in a place, maybe you're starting a business, or if you're an owner, and you don't have a vending machine because you just don't feel like you're going to be able to find a company that deals with, let's say, a single solitary location, or you maybe have priced the market before and it was out of your reach, you just couldn't afford it, you didn't think it was going to be something you could do. EH Vending is actually there to serve you by finding a way that it functions with your budget, and finding a way that you can afford this and that it works for your business. And actually, and I'll be honest, a lot of the business that EH Vending picks up is people who maybe don't have the money that it would require to work with a traditional mainstream vending company, because those companies sometimes want, they want you to be a franchise. They want you to be a chain. They want you to have 17 different locations before they'll even look at you. And, and that's elitism, Dawn, and we won't have it here.
No.
That's pretense. And the Rick Emerson Show, we hold. We don't truck with such smugness. So we're a show of, by, and for the people, Dawn, and so is EH Vending.
Everyone deserves snacks.
That's
everyone.
Right. Everyone deserves, except these snacks, because these are ours. But I mean, it's, in general, in a sort of theoretical, figurative way, yes. We've talked a lot about that, but frankly, if you've got a vending company that you're dealing with now, and it's just not, do you ever do this where you're like, you have a business relationship with somebody that you have to see every now and again, maybe not that often, but like every now and again, and you just dread it? You just dread like that one time every 2 weeks or every 2 months or twice a year when the guy comes to your office and he says, hey, so I came by to make sure that everything's hunky-dory. And you're just, You know, and you're just looking at the calendar, just waiting for the guy to come by the office and visit you with dread because he's just such a tool. A lot of times you have a vending company that has to come by and they have to service things, they have to fill things, they have to repair things. You might not enjoy the relationship you're having with the company. You might feel like you're just not getting the best for your money. EH Vending can make sure that it's a pleasant experience all the way around, personally, economically, everything. And again, they're longtime listeners. So here is clue number two. By the way, this is just the rattling sound of the Snickers peanut butter. This itself is not a clue. That's just me. That's just an anticipatory noise that I'm making here. Here is clue number two for this week's Name That Snack contest. And again, if you are the first person come Friday to correctly identify the snack in question via snack at rickemerson.com, you win yourself a big bag of consumable goodness from EH Vending. Today's clue is World's Fair. That's today's clue. World's Fair. That's the clue for EH Vending's Name That Snack contest for the week of February 14th, 2011.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, so I got the Snickers peanut butter right here. Here's the great thing, though, is it's perfect for this situation right now because it is already made into two discrete squares.
Why would that be perfect for this situation since you're giving me the entire thing?
I don't think that was part of the... I don't think I actually said that.
You were bringing it for me.
Well, in general, I am bringing the snack to you as a notion, as a thing.
Unless it's going to be like a big federal case.
I guess I'd better give it back to you with half of it in there before I taste it and see how delicious it is.
Here's what you should do, though, is you should actually try it, and then if you find it to be satisfying and wonderful, then you keep it.
It smells wonderful.
If you feel like you're indifferent to it or maybe it's not your bag, then you give the other one to me, and I'll happily dispose of that into my gullet.
It's interesting. By putting it in two different pieces, having it, it's sort of like one large sort of... piece of candy.
Now, it does look like it's wider than a Snickers bar. Now, you're still getting less, weight.
I don't think it's wider.
Not?
No.
Is that... Now, tell me about the ridges on top of this. Is that what they mean when they say something is enrobed by chocolate?
Enrobed just means that it's covered.
I thought you said there was a specific process.
There is a chocolate enrobing machine, which is when they run it along and it gets the dunking on the bottom, but that basically those things that you see, it kind of like a waterfall that just goes
right
over everything as it goes through it.
Can I just tell you what's great about a candy bar? When you get a candy bar like your Milky Way, your Snickers, it's those little ridges of chocolate on top, like it's almost been drizzled before it dries. Those are really good. They give you the texture. All right.
I'm eating this now. That is very good.
Isn't that fantastic? And the texture, though. So it's got, it's like creamy, but it's crunchy because it's got the peanuts in it.
No.
And then the peanuts are there, plus it's got that sort of Reese's-esque peanut butter cream inside. So it tastes more like actual peanuts or peanut butter than a Reese's does, but it's still got the candy taste.
Yeah, it's a lot subtler than I thought it was going to be. The texture is essentially the same as your Air Average Snickers bar. And then you really get the extra peanut butter punch, you know, in the aftertaste.
Yeah, no, I'm
really very nice.
I'm a huge fan of those things. So there you go. So you can just take that on home with you. Mm. I'm going to have a little bit for later.
On the Snickers Wikipedia page, they have all of these different versions of Snickers that have come out over the years. In 2008, there was a Snickers Charged.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Snickers Charged.
Was that with caffeine?
It had caffeine, taurine, and B vitamins. In 2008, there was also Snickers The Lot. It had crispy pieces in thick cream caramel, sprinkled with a large amount of nuts and covered in chocolate. That was in Australia and New Zealand. Last year, we missed out on the Snickers Maximus, a limited edition that had only caramel and peanuts in the center. They didn't have any of the nougat, apparently.
Snickers Maximus?
Snickers Maximus.
Well, that's just a mismatch of name and actual content, though, because then the Snickers Maximus just sounds like it's a Snickers bar, but it's huge.
They also had a more nuts version that had 10% higher nut content. There's been...
As do I, by the way.
In the Czech Republic and Denmark and Estonia, they've had some things like Snickers Crazy Peanuts. In Canada, because Canada gets weird candy sometimes because, you know, they're kind of English, but not really. For a while, they got Snickers Maple.
As instead of the caramel or in addition to the caramel?
I guess it would probably be the nougat would probably be maple flavored. So it would be in addition to the caramel, I'm thinking.
I don't even know where Estonia is. That's one of those places that people mention and I have no idea.
It's by Latvia.
Sarah X. Dillon, where's Estonia?
All I know that from is from Encino Man.
That's my thing, too, and I don't know where it is in actual reality.
Sorry, we had to get our headphones.
That's a. You look very nice.
Thank you. We're doing our Blazers press shot.
Ah, I see. Wondered if you have sort of a, I don't mean this in a creepy way, you have kind of a Catholic schoolgirl thing going on with the dress there. You know what I mean? It just, it looks very similar to, if it had little stripes of green, I think it would be exactly that.
Thank you very much.
So this is you and Greg Nibbler doing your official press shots?
Yes, I'm very, very nervous / excited.
Can I ask where you're getting them done? I mean, is it like at the at the Rose Garden?
Yeah, we're heading to Blazers headquarters.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just as intimidating as it sounds.
Are you going to get them done on the court?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
That'd be awesome.
It would be so awesome. I want to touch the court.
Hey, as you get ready to go on television, would you like a Snickers peanut bar?
Yes, I would.
Hey. Okay.
I really said that because I thought she'd say no because of the television-induced vanity and all.
All right. Wish us luck.
All right. Good luck.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler, of course.
She didn't take it.
No, she didn't. No, I see. I kind of thought she wouldn't.
There also was an Indiana Jones Snickers adventure bar that had chocolate nuts, spices, and coconut.
You know, they've started putting coconut in a lot of things now, and I love coconut. But the thing about that is that the coconut always tastes, not always, quite often it tastes, fake is the wrong word for it. It just tastes synthesized and badly.
Let's say it's like banana flavoring. It's just, it's never done well if it's an artificial flavor.
Yeah.
Artificial coconut flavor doesn't taste good ever, ever, ever.
By the way, it's in Northern Europe, west of Russia. Says Aaron in the OC, who we need to wish a belated birthday to. Because he posted some drunken thing on my Twitter saying, it's my birthday. And then followed by this woo that went on for like 100 O's. He says, I'm not even white or European, and I know that. No. I can't even imagine. What would you say was in the Estonian Snickers bar?
Oh, it was let's see. They had the, hold on, let me find it here. There was Snickers Crazy Peanuts,
uh-huh.
which was sold in like the Czech Republic and Estonia and Denmark.
Candy
and, like,
from the Czech
Poland.
Republic.
And also Snickers Hard, which I don't know what that would be.
Tree Pretty. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Snickers bar from Poland. Snickers lots of clods.
At one time, there was also apparently something called the Snickers Flapjack, which was some kind of
I got your Snickers Flapjack.
Patty thing or something.
Okay. Everybody, it's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Snickers Flapjack is next to Gobbler's Knob, I think.
A young Winnipeg man is breathing a bit easier following a tense encounter with city cops while he was holding only a lit cigarette in his home just after midnight Friday morning. Standing on a staircase inside the front door early Friday, Dorian Kennedy saw the red beam of a tactical team cop's gun squarely on his chest while the heavily armed officers were at the fourplex to respond to a call about a firearm seen nearby. I just had a smoke in my hand, and they were pointing that gun at me, pointing it right at my chest and telling me to put my smoke down. And I was telling them to hold on for a second. I had two more drags left. And then they started screaming at me, put the effing cigarette down, or something really loud. Despite his surprise at the order concerning what he doesn't consider a weapon, the 19-year-old tossed the cigarette onto the floor.
Yes, I would imagine.
And then he was handcuffed immediately afterwards.
Jesus, God.
He was not charged. But officers did charge a 17-year-old boy with carrying a concealed weapon and possessing a weapon dangerous to the public peace. He allegedly carried a pellet gun, which is why the police were called.
I was going to ask you what the point of origination was for this entire thing.
Police spokesman Constable Sean Chornley said officers were absolutely not overreacting to the cigarette. He said, it's a lit cigarette. He can use it as a weapon, either burning the officer or poking him in the eye with it. Anything.
Okay.
It would make sense to have nothing in his hands when he's taken into custody.
All right. Let's see. I will have to. We'll probably get to this later. I'm sorry. Somebody just sent me a little. I don't even know that it's breaking news, but it's something of which I was not aware. Let's get to one more. Did you just do the thing of having the Snickers bar and then a mouthful of Vizo?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like orange juice and toothpaste. Let's do this. Let's do one more watch, and then we're going to do our house recap for last night.
Let's do our Taser watch.
All right, here's your Taser watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. You got me running, going. is Dawn Taylor with your Taser Watch.
A 400-pound Michigan woman was caught shoplifting when her motorized cart got stuck in the store's door. Jerry Perkins, 30, of Pontiac, Michigan, was attempting to leave a Meijer store in Rochester Hills with more than $600 worth of stolen electronic merchandise on Tuesday night. She set off the door alarm and hit a store employee who confronted her when a sheriff's deputy arrived, and she was trapped in the door because her motorized cart got stuck.
So this is a woman of substantial, this is a 300-pound woman?
400-pound woman. She set off the door alarm. Her motorized cart got stuck in the door. An employee confronted her. When a sheriff's deputy arrived, she, quote, took a fighting stance and had to be tasered to be subdued.
How do you take a fighting stance if you weigh 400 pounds and also you have to have...
And you're in a cart.
And you have to have a cart just to move down the aisle to get more food.
I don't know. You raise your fist like this, like you're like...
I don't think
why
she raises.
Why Iota or something? I don't know.
A whole lot of raising of any. You just waggled your arms more than I think probably is representative of her.
If someone weighed 400 pounds and they waggled their arms at you, that could be frightening in and of itself.
So she's driving. She's like a big, like a rascal thing, basically.
Right.
And it actually broke down. It wasn't like she got wedged in the door because of her size. It was
it
stopped working.
It got stuck in the store's door. I mean, who knows? Maybe she was making a run for it and the employees went, "Stop, thief." And they like actually closed the doors on her. And then she got stuck. I don't know.
And so she put up a fighting stance.
And then was tasered.
It makes you wonder, well, several things. A, first of all, how do they know that she weighs 400 pounds? I'm not saying she doesn't, but I'm saying there's no – that's like when they say the Super Bowl is watched by a billion people and they're making it up. Because there's just no – because there aren't a billion people in the world with Nielsen devices, first of all.
Maybe they asked her, how much do you weigh anyway? 400 pounds.
Because she's standing on a scale a lot, I would imagine. I think she's reached probably a point where she is horizontal maybe 98% of the day. So that seems like it's a bit of guesswork. But, I mean, if she's large enough she can't really be effectively weighed, then I guess you could assume she's like Schrodinger's, she's like a Schrodinger's weight then, where you just have to assume she is all weights.
Maybe they have one of those guys who has like that special skill, like at the carnival, who can just tell from looking at you.
They bring in a guy like Amazo the Clown.
Yeah.
390 pounds! And then she wins a bicentennial stamp. So I guess they could weigh her in sections, maybe. I don't know if that works. So the taser, though, as ineffective as it seems to be on just the average person, seems like it would be less effective or more effective?
It's easier to hit her with all the prongs.
But I guess my question, though, is it more or less effective because the electricity has to go through a larger area? And presumably the muscles are ensconced in fatty tissue, which may or may not conduct.
I don't think that matters. I think once it actually hits your body, it just, you know, it hits your body.
Well, that's not true.
It just goes everywhere.
That's like saying – see, here's how you know that's not true. Because if you were to tase the ocean, everything in it would be electrocuted because water conducts electricity.
Well, her body's a closed system, Rick.
But you see what I'm saying? Like it dissipates over time.
I don't.
In other words, if that were true, could I tase the ocean and electrocute everything in it? Why not?
Probably not.
Why not?
I don't know.
So that's what I'm saying is, doesn't it seem like...
Maybe. I would imagine the amount of voltage that is coming out of a taser, that whether you weigh 200 pounds or 300 pounds or 400 pounds, it's still going to jolt you.
It's like you're totally not used to people asking you questions that like they really want answers to. So like when I say like, but about the ocean, like why not? And then you just sort of blink at me.
I was just when you said dissipate, it just made me laugh. Because of our conversation a few days ago about
what?
About the gas station and the fumes and the dissipating and you saying that the Earth is a closed system and all of that.
Did I say dissipating? Were we talking about dissipation
was,
in there?
No, I was talking about dissipation there and you were
in what context?
Oh,
I don't even remember.
Okay, never mind.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't know. This is another question we would probably have to ask a taser expert when we get them in here.
Because it's like if you had, it's
it
like
would be as effective on a large person.
Because it's like thinking of it this way. Like if you had instead of thinking of a large person, what if you had 10 regular sized people link hands and you tased one of them? Now, if you two people tase hands, in fact, I know this is true because when I was a kid, one of my idiot cousins touched an electric fence and then his idiot brother came out and, of course, you know, it grabbed him to try to get him off the – and then it was like 9 of them all linked on the electric fence at once because it makes your muscles seize. So that works, but it obviously doesn't work forever.
No.
So like if you tase two people linking hands, you know, they're both going to – but like 100 people linking hands, probably not. So I wonder if you could reach a certain girth where the taser no longer had the effect.
Maybe, but you'd have to be like huge. It would have to be like a whale or something. A taser probably wouldn't work on a whale.
Well, that's not true. But see, here's the reason why that's not true is because we have read stories where tasers haven't worked on regular-sized people.
Yeah.
So
but that's usually because all of the prongs, though, aren't going into them. Because remember, you have to have the multiple prongs so that you like break, you create the
That's another interesting question. Well, fortunately, we're getting a cop on next month to talk about this because that was my thing when they said they tase a guy four or five times. Does that mean that they had to get four or five different tasers out there to like shoot him with the darts? Because like those darts don't reload. You have to go in and take them to the shop. Or do they tase the guy, they hit him with the darts, but then they have to press the button five or six times to jolt him?
I don't know. And sometimes stun guns are misidentified as tasers.
That's
in,
true.
In stories
the
as
terms
well.
Are kind of used interchangeably.
Yeah.
All right, we should start keeping a long list of these questions because I think we've had maybe many dozens of taser-oriented questions, and they just vanish like dust in the wind, like sands through the hourglass. Don.
Yes.
All right. Is that the end of that?
That is the end of that.
All right. Hold on a second. And wait. And yeah, there we go. Awesome. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. And actually, give me just one moment here while I do. There we go. This. So no discussion of tasing is complete without mentioning our good friends at Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, insured electrical contractors, installers, and maintenance providers. It means they can come out, they can make sure that if things were put in correctly the first time, they continue to do so. If things were put in incorrectly the first time, if the guy who installed them was just, frankly, a flat-out maniac, you want to find that out sooner rather than later, because the longer you postpone those things, I would say the more that's gonna rebound onto you, as they say. You're gonna have some reversals there in your home. So you want to get that sort of thing looked at. If you're moving into a brand new house, you want to get it you want to get it outfitted just so. If you're having the house built from scratch, certainly, or if you're moving into a house that somebody had before, and you want to know that you're getting a square deal, as my grandfather used to say, that the guy who's showing you the house knows everything about it. There's no hidden damage to the wiring system or the electrical system, because then it's just once you move in, you sign it, you're in the house. Then if you find something wrong, you're never gonna see that guy again. That guy will have he will have folded his tent and stolen away into the night. He will never again appear on your doorstep. So you want to make sure that the house functions as advertised before you move in. If you're moving into a new location with your business, or if you're going to have the inspectors out your way, you want to make sure you pass the first time. So you contact Squires Electric. They'll get your free estimate up front so you know about what you're going to pay. And again, they are longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson radio program. So please tell me you heard it here. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. It is Squires Electric. .com, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Someone who describes himself as being a mechanical engineer at OSU says, the pain of the shock is in proportion to the current, which is proportional to the resistance. More resistance to the electrical flow, less current, less pain. So if you presume that nothing, or at least nothing in the human body, conducts electricity without some loss or dissipation of force or energy. So if nothing is a perfect conductor, then by definition, I guess the more person there was to conduct the energy, the more energy loss you're going to have, so therefore the less the pain. All right. So there's got to be some point at which, like some event horizon at which you're huge enough that you can just go, solo, and just sort of throw the thing off.
So if you're intending to commit some kind of heinous act where you might...
I'm sorry, a penis act?
Heinous.
Oh.
Heinous act. Where you might get tased, it actually, like, behooves you to bulk up as much as possible first.
If you're going to be committing a penis act, it behooves you to bulk up as well.
Too.
I'm just saying, like, in case anybody was planning one of those. Somebody says, did you find out about J.T. Walsh and M. Emmett Walsh? Don?
Yeah. They do not appear to be related. I was apparently completely wrong about that. That's something I just made up in my own head.
You now have 100% confidence that your 75% confident answer was wrong.
Exactly.
Excellent. By the way, somebody just emailed and says, hey, they're brothers. So I don't even know what
to
believe.
Are they? Well, then maybe...
I don't know. Realize I'm just reading a thing.
Maybe that's one of those things that a lot of us think that isn't actually true. Because I don't know.
Okay. Should we just agree right now that we're never going to know the answer to it?
No, we will never know. No one will ever know.
Let's say right now it's one of those crystal skull things. We'll never figure out the answer. We're just going to move on.
This is like what the Mayans like actually were doing and what they call the ball courts. You know, we'll never know what they were really, really up to.
It's best not to pursue these things.
No.
All right. It is that time, ladies and gentlefolk. It is Tuesday, so we will have a recap of last night's episode of House, Season 7, Episode 12. The name eludes me at the moment. I will just give it an ad hoc name. I'll call it the episode about which I remember almost nothing because I found it tedious in every way. I'll say that the only moment from last night that I really do remember was... That's actually not true. The opening sequence I quite liked in the restaurant, just because it's always like it. I don't care for the opening sequence in House in general, only because it's like the opening sequence in 6 Feet Under, where it just becomes a thing you got to wait through before you can get to the opening credits and the actual show starts. But you always do kind of wonder, like, what is the interesting ailment that they're going to have this week? And the one last night was one that at first I thought was really interesting because it seems like it's a thing that I'd never heard of before, and it wasn't a variation on a theme. I also liked for some reason the moment when Foreman and Taub were sitting on the couch playing Xbox and they were talking about something or whatever. They were talking about his fear of taking the test, and because that sounded like it sounded like believable, realistic dialogue between two guys, because the writing on that show can sometimes seem either very stiff or very formulaic, and that felt like it was actual. It felt very natural or naturalistic or one of those words. The rest of the show I was sort of meh about.
I actually started to say that I couldn't immediately even remember what the show was about. Then I remembered and realized that was kind of ironic,
yeah,
because the show was about the woman who had the perfect memory.
Who is that actress? She looked like that chick that was in Heavenly Creatures, but it's not her.
No, and I've seen her in a number of things in recent years. I was going to look her up and try and figure out what she's... Because I know her from something terrific, and I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, she seemed very familiar to me, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And I meant to Google it. And
She used to be a little heavier, too, and I think that's part of it as well. So I don't know, but yeah, I was really underwhelmed by the whole episode, and it was kind of similar that I was watching it, but it was just like slipping off of my brain like Teflon just as soon as it was over. We had been watching Megashark versus
I meant to ask you about that. So Megashark versus
Crocosaurus.
Crocosaurus.
Which I thought...
Is this a Corman joint?
No, this is one of the sci-fi channel. What are they called? They're called Asylum Pictures that are making all of these.
Is it a sequel to Megashark versus Giant Octopus or whatever?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the same Megashark.
Really? The actual same Mega Shark?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be the same Mega Shark. He's still alive or
something.
Interesting. But things, I had thought that it was going to be the one with Tiffany and Debbie Gibson in it. And it turns out it is Mega Python versus Gatoroid.
Okay.
So I had the wrong movie. But this one, there is a Crocosaurus, which is a gigantic crocodile that lives in the side of a mountain in a cave in the Congo. And it bursts out and... Then at some point, then very quickly, it gets captured and it's put on a ship to send it somewhere. I was kind of unclear on what the whole point of putting it on a ship and sending it somewhere was.
So it could get loose.
Yeah, and they also had a whole bunch of big eggs. They had alligator Crocosaurus
like
eggs. And then it ran into a Mega Shark, like on the ocean. Because... I mean,
like two guys at a bus stop, sort of,
yeah,
like you.
Pretty much, because I actually tweeted this at the time. I was going, seriously, what are the odds that the ship transporting Crocosaurus would just run into Mega Shark on the open sea? It's just bad luck for everyone. So, and everyone on the ship dies when the ship with the Crocosaurus is attacked by the Mega Shark, except for the one guy on the ship who's a shark expert, mm-hmm, who's played by Jaleel White.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So Urkel is the shark expert, and everyone else in the movie is no one you've ever heard of, except for the hard-as-nails Navy admiral, who's Robert Picardo, for some reason.
It's telling, by the way, that it took us 7 seconds to get off of the subject of House and onto Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus.
And, yeah, so we were watching Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus, and it really wasn't very good, surprisingly. And by the way, those special effects in those movies, even worse on a giant TV.
Yeah.
And so then, well, House is on. Let's go watch House instead. And started watching House. And House proved to be even less memorable than Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus.
It really did seem like the very definition of a filler episode. It was a Monster of the Week episode that had no... And where nothing really happened
like,
in
oh,
terms
look,
of character
Wilson's
development.
Got a cat.
Yeah, I mean, can I just tell you this? The thing about House and Wilson is irritating under the best of circumstances sometimes. But... I'm sorry, pardon me.
But
I made the mistake of eating that Snickers bar.
And House has some kind of, like, weird girly fixation where he doesn't want Wilson to date. Or he wants Wilson to get laid, but he doesn't like it when Wilson is involved with somebody. But now that Wilson is not involved with somebody, he's telling him he needs to be involved with somebody. But he doesn't like him having a cat, so he's going to try and get rid of his cat good reason.
It almost seemed like a parody of something that House would do to try to sort of keep Wilson's life off kilter. It was like I don't think I've ever heard any discussion of cats at all ever on the show until it became expedient for plot purposes for them to have something that House believes about cats. And also, am I the only one who keeps, and I think this has only ever happened once in the series, maybe it's happened more often, am I the only one who keeps waiting for the cops to arrest somebody for breaking into somebody else's car or house, which happens every episode?
They just go break into somebody's house.
He's breaking
house.
Into Wilson's car. It, by the way, in the parking garage of a hospital.
They break into the patients' houses
every
all the
week.
Time.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
And I think it was only 2 or 3 weeks ago that they got busted for the first time. And then it just went away like nothing was ever said about it again.
And they also, it's also obvious that now that they finally got House and Cuddy together, they have absolutely no idea what to do with that relationship.
Right.
Because we only ever see her now just like, kind of dressed in a robe, like sitting on the bed going, hey, House, you shouldn't do that. Or, oh, you should talk about your feelings more. By the way, doesn't she have a child? Why is she never caring for her child?
That's a good question. Where was the kid, last night or last week, for that matter? The kid is... Because I think it's a toddler still, right?
Yeah.
And they did that one episode a few weeks back, which I actually quite liked, where the daughter, whose name I can't even remember at this point... Ava? Hope?
Yeah, whatever.
Hansel?
Plot device, Cuddy.
But where the kid, like, it was where the House was trying to get the kid into the nursery school for the Brilliant or whatever. And the kid, like, crawled up into his lap at the end. And it was actually, I found it to be sort of a sweet moment. But then the kid just sort of vanished until they needed, and until, like, next time that, like, a distraction or ancillary subject matter is needed for the show.
And as obsessive as Cuddy was about getting a child and having a child and keeping a child in the early stages of this whole plot arc, now that she's... boffing House, she doesn't seem to give a damn where the kid is or what's going on with the kid.
Well, the kid is a microcosm for the whole House Cuddy plotline, though, right? Like, the kid was just a MacGuffin. It was just like a carrot. It was like that thing the dogs chase at the track. And then once she caught it, she's like, well, I guess I'm done. And then now the kid only appears when there needs to be some sort of a friction or plot development with House, just like the House Cuddy thing only was there to create friction and plot development for the show. So, So there's that. And just back on the breaking in for a second, that is a plot device that seems like they should have gotten rid of really early in the show, because as unbelievable as that program is most of the time, that is a thing that just continues to rankle me as just being particularly unbelievable, because you've got to assume that if House is breaking into people's places all the time, which Cuddy, by the way, knows... And Cuddy has gone through those phases where she was, like, directly responsible to the board and she wasn't going to tolerate any of House's nonsense and whatever. You got to figure the board of directors, who we've already seen wield a pretty big stick at the hospital, the board of directors must know that House is breaking into homes and that he's having people break in. And at one point having them dig up a corpse, by the way, doing actual grave robbing, like in, I think, season 4 or 5. So that is... I try not to be one of those guys who just, I can suspend my disbelief with the best of them. But that is a thing that I just cannot get past.
Well,
the fact that they continue to let that happen.
Yeah, because, we're ignoring the fact that with all of the different ways they've experimented on people and almost killed them, like 3 or 4 times before they cure them, there would be a raft of lawsuits just constantly going on
there
against these people.
Don't you think it should be a crossover show that's nothing but lawsuits against Princeton Plainsboro?
No, the law, it'll be like a David E. Kelly show about the law firm that their entire job is to defend Plainsboro.
That's a great idea. They could totally do a whole Looking Glass version of the show through that.
But the other thing is that at some point, somebody would, at least one of these patients would have been pissed off when they find out that somebody broke into their house.
Right.
I mean, okay, great, you saved my life and all that sort of thing, but you broke into my house.
Well, and doesn't it seem likely, doesn't the law of averages indicate that at this point, seven seasons in, just the sheer numbers of it indicate that at some point they will have broken into the house of somebody who has secretly done something really bad, like putting a body in their attic that they didn't want discovered.
Or how about somebody that just has, like, say, an alarm system or neighbors?
Yeah. Lives on a street where there are people. Let's see. I had something else to say, but it's just a... Wait. No, it's... No, I guess it's gone. It was something about Cuddy and the kid, but I don't even... Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I guess maybe it's unfair to put this all on the show because we're seven seasons in, so it's like, how good is it really going to be? I mean, almost no show is good after seven seasons. I mean, we talk about The Shield wrapping up really well at seven seasons, but I'm trying to think if there was anything else in terms of drama that was still good seven seasons in. And I just can't think of anything. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I can't think of anything that was still good after seven seasons. One of the goddamn Sopranos. And it wasn't 6 feet under.
I'm having this thing, by the way, where it's really difficult sometimes when you watch a show, like, in real time, like a show that's actually currently on, but you're also watching a show that was on, like, a few years ago, and it has, like, similar actors.
Right.
And they look the same. And it's like, I love Fringe, J.J. Abrams' Fringe, and I watch Fringe every week. But Lance Riddick, man, it's like him being, like, on The Wire and on Fringe and... looking exactly the same and wearing the suit and being like in charge. I get confused sometimes as to, like, you know, who he works for and what his job is.
And what universe this takes place.
Yes.
You know, a sort of a reverse of that was when The Wire had been off the air, I think, for just maybe about 6 months or so. And that god-awful, that Life on Mars show, the American version of Life on Mars premiered. And what's his name who plays Lester Freeman was in Life on Mars. And so was Michael Imperioli, and he got the lion's share of the attention, but Lester Freeman was in Life on Mars. And you want to talk about just the most head-snapping transition, going from one of the, probably the best police procedural I've ever seen in my life to goddamn Life on Mars, where they're doing all of the, you know, jumping off buildings and waving guns around and car chasing, and it was just, and that was just, you wonder, like, how difficult it is for guys like that to make that transition, like The Wire people especially in recent years are the best example, where they get so many job offers because of that particular show, because you know that that is a show that other television writers and creators watch. And they must get a lot of job offers in the same sort of genre. And yet the curse of that is they know that, by definition, anything they take is going to be this huge step down. Now, Fringe is a lateral move because it's a different kind of show altogether. But, I mean, that must be a challenge, trying to figure out how do you follow that up.
Yeah. I know after The Shield was over, Kenny Johnson went to Saving Grace on TNT. And when I was first watching that, I remember looking at him and thinking, God, he looks kind of puffy and he looks so tired and worn out. And, you know, in my own head, and I thought, he has been through a lot.
Yes.
And then I realized, oh, okay, wait a minute. He's not actually Lem.
Well.
Because in my mind, it was the same character. He's like, now he's like, sure, in this show, it's in Oklahoma City.
They put him back together and sent him to Oklahoma.
But he's still playing a plainclothes cop. You know, and
I didn't know that.
And it's like, so to me, I swear to God, it was like, I thought it was this, in my mind, he's still Lem. And I'm like, well, of course he looks tired.
He's been blown up.
Yeah, he's been blown up, and he had a hard life. I'm like, wait a minute. Ugh. That makes no sense.
All right, well, there you go. Da-da-da-da-ba-ba-ba house. I mean, I guess the only thing now, because we're halfway through the season, is trying to figure out what huge life-changing revelation they're gonna build to, because that'll start at around episode 17.
Well, yeah. He and Cuddy are going to have to discover that their relationship doesn't work, and they're going to have to break up so that then there will be some kind of tension or something. I mean, what else are you going to do? We've already killed Wilson's girlfriend.
Right.
Cuddy got her baby. Now we got the whole House and Cuddy are together thing. What?
And
what are they going to do?
Well, there you go. So there's how I realize now that, you know, because I sort of power loaded the first five seasons or whatever in like the course of 6 months, that we are by definition sort of coming in at the, we're picking the exactly the wrong time to start doing a recap of the show. But I mean, you know, but I'm still watching it every week and would be anyway, is the thing, because they've just, and you wonder about Hugh Laurie, like a guy like that who is clearly so smart and is such a talented and brilliant actor. You wonder, and I think, do you think this about the House guys a lot, the actors? Do you wonder if when they get the script every week, if they just sort of like groan to themselves when they see the phrase like, but we can't interfere on, that'll kill him. Like if they just go like, God damn. Like do the actors, do you think, ever bring it up and go like, can't we find a different way to say this? Like I've said this 100 times.
Although it was either this week or last week at some point, House just listens and goes, maybe it's lupus. And then there's a beat and he goes, I'm just kidding. Anyway, it's like, so even they know that it's just, that we know that it's tired.
Is that like everybody's on the same page? Like, you know, they get that we understand it. What, like Anthony Head used to talk about that with the library scenes in Buffy, where he said that it was just torment. He said they just hated the library scenes because it was just pages of like exposition about made up demons. and it was just so completely tedious for everybody. pardon me. Let's see. It is Tuesday. That means tomorrow is Wednesday. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be joined by, I believe, Willamette Week's Kelly Clark. So that'll be tomorrow on Wednesday's program. Thursday, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian will be here. Pardon me. And Friday, remind me to not eat these Snickers bars, A, ever again, but also not while I'm doing the show. Because then I got that whole thing of, like, peanuts in my teeth.
Oh, yeah, don't do
peanuts.
That.
Peanuts. And then Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. We want to thank all of our guests today, including I didn't play The Week in Geek from Aaron Duran. So I will actually play that tomorrow. We're sort of at the end of this. So I will. And somebody's typing a message that says, move your car, Don. Thank you, sir, madam. We'll do Week in Geek from Aaron Duran tomorrow. And
How do they know where I'm parked?
Best not to ask yourself these questions. Because that, you know, it's like, do you really want to know the answer to that? I'm guessing probably not. Okay, that would just be my guess.
That's very creepy.
Anywho, so the Rick Emerson show will be back again tomorrow. We want to thank our guests today, including from the Alter Ego Society, Mr. Benjamin Barker, who is here, and so forth. Tomorrow, Aaron Duran and Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe and continue to spread the word, if you will. We thank you for your kind support. It is Tuesday, February 15th, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye now.